Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. And look, I have a co-host already.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm looking at the odd thing is oh, wait, never mind. I'm on a different phone number. I was going to say I have the switchboard open because of the audio, and it's not showing my number. I forgot I used a different cell phone. So forget that. never mind. I forgot I was using my other cell phone. But anyway.
That's okay.
Hello.
I see your number.
I will. Yeah, I know. It's just not my regular phone number.
Yeah.
So as I posted on Twitter, so people know, I am going to post a sneak peek, spoiler-free, of my Lucifer interview with Amy Garcia tonight. I have two little clips set up. I'll play the first one at 10:30, around 10:30, depending where we're at, somewhere around 10:30, if people want to listen for that, because I had said I was going to tease something. So I'm going to play that when we get a chance here. After a while, but we'll wait till 10:30. So how are you tonight?
I am good. And look, Karen is here.
Yay. Hi, you guys. How are you?
Good evening, Karen.
Oh, good.
Happy Tuesday to you guys.
Happy
yes.
Tuesday.
Time for another exciting podcast, and we've got so much stuff to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do.
It's like old times. It's like 2019. It's like the before time.
The before time.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. So I heard you saying, Jamie, you're going to play clips from Lucifer at 10:30. So,
yeah, from my
said?
Amy Garcia interview, yes.
Okay.
I'll play the first clip at 10:30, and then we'll pick a time for the second clip.
Okay, cool. So should we jump into some other stuff then?
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay, let's go for it. What do you want to do? Walking Dead, right? Start with Walking Dead. So how did you enjoy this episode of Walking Dead?
Okay, I have to go back and think which one.
Okay.
It's funny because other people are caught up because they freaking air AMC Plus a week ahead. It's so confusing.
We're only doing television.
No, I
what's
know.
Aired on television.
So this is the episode with the horses, yes.
This episode, there are two parts. There's the one with the horses, and the other half of it is the aftermath of the Reaper's attack, which occurred
right,
at the end of last week's episode, right?
Which is with Maggie and Negan and Callie.
Alden, mostly, yeah. Mostly
Alden.
With the three of them in it.
I think it was really
yeah.
Funny. Yeah.
I mean,
all
there
right,
are some other people. Oh, and Gabriel. I mean, we see quite a bit of Gabriel.
Right,
everybody is scattered. Everybody who's alive is scattered. What'd you think?
There was a lot of good things up. So I just want to say for anybody who does care that my exclusive with my brain is fried. I want to call her by with Angel Theory. I keep wanting to call her Dame Kelly, but the girl plays Angel. Or plays Kelly.
No.
I'll get it eventually. Angel Theory and Nadia Hilker, who plays Magna, that exclusive is up if people want to read it at scifivision.com. I closed out, I don't think. So, yeah, I mean, a lot went on in this one. The one thing I'm thinking, like, standing out, having seen it, like, a while ago, the one thing I did, like, I know a lot of this, the part, if we talk about with the scenes with Maggie first, one of the things that I remember that kind of stuck out to me was that, you know, she's still, as always, fighting with him and that, and Alden's trying to make her leave, you know, you have to leave him because he's slowing him down, and I think she knows that too, and Negan says that too. But I like that at one point, I forget exactly what he says, but she's like telling Negan how mad he is, and he's like, yeah, but whether you're mad at me or not, you still have to decide. I forget exactly what his comment is, but she, like, just because she's pissed at him doesn't mean that she cannot make this. I mean, you know, not making a decision or not making a decision is still making a decision with something like that. She has to decide whether to leave him or not. I don't know, for whatever reason, like that scene. And the other thing that stands out for me this episode is I really don't like the ate the horse. But I guess as Maggie's kid says, it's better than spiders. So there you go.
Hey, Adrian and I watched the show where they ate people for like 5 years in the time jump. So on the 100.
I mean, it's okay. Not a whole
huge
lot
spoiler.
Happened. What?
I just gave 100. A huge spoiler for that show for anyone who hasn't watched it.
It's been over for a while. I think that it's their fault if they don't watch it. I mean, I think this was an okay episode. I feel like not a whole lot happened. I didn't think it really had
Nothing
anything
happened.
Super important in this episode, but I don't know. What did you think?
I thought it was not very good. I mean, it's not like a season 8 level of horrible, but it's definitely like
right.
a Scott Gimple worthy episode. I thought it was not good. I really, based on what I'm seeing, I have no interest in watching a Daryl and Carol spinoff because two of the formerly best characters are now really two of the worst characters. Like, to me, this was Carol making soup all over again. Remember we had to watch that whole episode of Carol trying to make soup?
Yeah.
And, like, watching them try to catch these horses was kind of dumb. It was another example of Carol, like, the group has something they need to get done, and Carol decides she's going to do something else, which is, like, Carol's entire character since Henry died, right? Like, she won't listen to anyone, but she won't explain to anyone what she's doing either. Why she has to concoct this lie that we need the horses to, move equipment and whatever.
Well, I think, I don't know that that was completely a lie. I mean, I think they needed it for both reasons. They need the horses because they need the horses, but yes, they also needed food. So I don't think she thought of saying, let's catch a horse so we can kill it. But, I mean, I
well,
think...
Well, why not, though? I mean, everyone is acting like they're literally starving to death, so no one should really object if there's a large animal that could feed a lot of people, right?
Here's my question. Were these their horses? That's the one thing that confused me. I thought these were their horses that ran away from before, but I wasn't sure. And then they were.
That's what enabled us to have the completely stupid part where the horses voluntarily walked themselves into the corral, right? Because that's the only way, I didn't really understand what happened, but because these totally inept people cannot get near the horses, which I don't know why, first of all, I don't know why the horses are so freaked out. They've only been on the loose for it's really only like a couple weeks or months since
that's
there was for a war, right?
That's why I wondered if I was wrong that they were their horses,
yes.
Because domesticated horses, I mean, no, they're not pets, but they should come to you for the most part. They shouldn't keep running
right.
away. So, yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think that they could have done other things to find to eat. I don't know that they needed to eat the horse, but I get what you're saying.
No,
they make it like they're starving, and they do. But they don't make – as much
no.
as they keep saying they're starving, they don't act like they're starving. Let's put it that way.
Well,
that's
I mean,
why
so it was
sort of incongruous.
Earlier in the episode, someone says there's no more game. The large herds have scared all the game away, which maybe I believe and maybe I don't believe.
Makes
I don't know.
Sense.
I don't
yeah.
know if I believe that or not, and that all of their fields are ruined and they can't grow anything or whatever. And I'm a little confused. Did the walkers also scare all the fishes out of the sea? Because, okay, the real
apparently.
Alexandria, Virginia has been a seaport since it was founded in, like, maybe the 1600s or something, right? And it sits on the water and has a waterfront.
And
it's on the
birds.
Well, somebody does try to shoot a bird in this episode, but also Oceanside was a fishing community on the Chesapeake. They have people who know how to fish. Like, so, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, you're right.
Anyway,
you're right. I feel like it was more a shock value, in my opinion. I feel like they did it more for a shock value, like they do a lot of shit on this show. And that's kind of why I have the problem with it. I mean, I obviously don't like it because I don't like to kill the horse. I mean, let's be honest. I'm going
to
hate it no matter what. But it's neither here nor there. The episode was still boring, regardless.
Well, I mean, it was boring, and it really bothers me that they have now created a situation where when Carol is on, I'm like, let me pick up the newspaper and read something. Like, Carol is one of the worst characters, and she's so boring, and she hasn't done anything of consequence. She's somehow
maybe
my fault
for their show.
Well, she's somehow at fault for Connie going missing in the cave, but I can't really remember why.
Well, yeah, she's definitely at fault. She set off that grenade or bomb or whatever. I don't remember what it was. The thing that she set off that set the cave-in off. That was how Connie got lost in there, because she decided she was going to try to kill the walkers. But that's neither here nor there. She feels at fault with it, and yet she's – I don't know if she feels that she needs to keep Hope up, and that's why she's kind of going out with Kelly to look for Connie, if it's because she feels responsible, if maybe she just wants her to feel Hope. I don't know her reasoning per se. I don't quite get why she's so adamant about ignoring Magna.
Well,
but
it is ridiculous. It is ridiculous for this show to imply that Kelly and Carol are wrong for searching for Connie when Daryl has been searching for Rick for literally like 6 years.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
So it's stupid. And I just feel like the only thing Carol's done for like 2 years is be an outcast and be kind of like anything anybody else wants to do, she won't go along with it. And then she makes some other plan that she fails to adequately explain or in any way explain what she's doing, which people might be like, oh, Carol, that's a good idea. Like, we are starving to death and maybe we can eat one of those horses.
I guess. Why can't we just have more
badass
Carol?
Instead, they're like, Carol, everyone's helping to build the wall except you, right? Like, that's really what happens in this episode. It's like Aaron's mad at her because she won't help.
Okay, that's right. There was.
Right? Like, so Carol's just the worst. And Daryl is terrible also because Daryl, like, as soon as Maggie shows up, Daryl abdicates any leadership quality that he's shown at all in the years since Maggie's been gone. And like, Maggie's been gone, why is she allowed to totally take over everything and nobody,
yeah,
like,
I don't know why everybody puts so much faith in Maggie, especially after what happened last week. You know, you would think that some of them would question it a little bit more, but they don't. I mean, this is just all down to the writing, but I will say next week's a Daryl episode. I don't think you're going to be much more impressed. I'll just say that.
Well, whatever. I don't care about what happens next week. What we've seen so far, like, Maggie. Okay, so not everybody, like, Aaron's not following along. Aaron and Carol both refuse to go because they're like, no, Maggie, your plan is wrong. And, like, Daryl also has, like, okay, I also really resent that, okay, there's another whole part of the episode that we'll talk about, but, like, the idea, like, how is it that Negan is now the most interesting person on this entire show?
I know. That's really sad, isn't it? It's become true, but it's sad. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. But like I said, it's not per se. I don't feel like this episode was bad. It was just uninteresting. It
wasn't good. So,
but no, right. But I mean, it wasn't like that it was like a horrible story. Nothing happened. And I agree, like, Negan is actually somewhat making sense in these last couple episodes and seems to be the only one.
I also thought the opening scene, the Reaper attack, so I'm just so sick of, why does every one of these shows have to have a group of, like crazy alien, crazy enemies who wear masks? Like, what is with everybody wearing masks on the show now all the time, right? Maybe they just use the same extras for all the shows, and so I don't know.
but there's also the crazy leaders. But I do want to say, I just want to say, going back to saying Negan is the only one that makes sense, I did appreciate that he, like, it didn't bother me. I mean, like, I didn't mind the fact that he, like, grabbed her, Maggie, and pulled her away. Like, he saved her. I mean, she was being an idiot. And he's just like, no, you can't save her. Like, she's being eaten.
I mean,
get away. But it's like, he's the only one that has a brain.
I thought the opening scene with the Reaper attack, I thought that was poorly choreographed, poorly directed, poorly shot, and mostly poorly maybe acted also. Like, that was just really hard to follow. Didn't make a lot of sense. And why is it the middle of the night, but every time they show Maggie, like, her face is lit, like, brightly lit with a glow almost, right? Like, what the hell was that? Yeah, maybe it isn't. That's a better reason than anything
the
director could
have
come up with.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
I thought that was bad. I think the Reapers are a ridiculous enemy force because, like, okay, I know what's going to happen. I mean, we don't know. We're going to find out maybe next week, but I'm sure and I think it's been spoiled, that they're all like former Special Forces.
I think they insinuated that with that other guy. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And so they're highly trained. They are basically invisible and make no sound until they disappear out of nowhere, right? And, like,
yeah.
I don't understand.
That makes them scary.
I don't understand why they're all waiting inside the mall. Like, how did they know Maggie was going to break into the mall? Like, they were trying to either kill or capture everyone. So Maggie goes into the mall, and somehow Reapers are everywhere hiding inside the mall. Like, how did they get up to the third floor before Maggie did, right? How did they even know she was going to go in there? And, like, everywhere anyone goes, there's a Reaper there already. And, like, are people who – well, I also don't understand. Okay, so you're talking about when that woman – when Maggie – so in this episode, Maggie goes around and meets up with all of her people that she brought with her, and one by one, they basically all get killed, right? So pretty much everybody
mm-hmm.
Maggie brought with her is dead now, except for
and
maybe a couple
of
people.
They should fall, Maggie, but yes.
But and
yeah,
so she goes around and she meets up with a woman whose name I can't remember, the woman who gets bitten and gets eaten, right? How,
looking at this, I think her name's Agatha, but go ahead.
Yes, Agatha. This is another example of, like, the zombies being
people not knowing
slow,
how to fight.
Well, no, yes, people who have survived 10 years in the zombie apocalypse suddenly don't know how to fight. And how is it that zombies completely sneak up on them and surround them without them? Like, on this show now, the zombies are slow when the writers need them to be slow. They're fast when the writers need them to be fast. They're quiet when the writers need them to be quiet.
I don't know if they're trying to make it scary in different ways or what they're doing, but it's sloppy writing. I don't know.
How did they get surrounded by, like, 8 zombies and get overrun by, like, 8 zombies? This happened in Fear the Walking Dead last year, right, when that guy Cole and
you know, all I can say is I think so far the other parts, and it wasn't in this episode, but the other part with the and I'm blanking, not thinking of their name, but the group with Eugene and all that are at the Commonwealth, that's what I could think of the name.
Yes.
I feel like that story is much more interesting. I would rather see that, and that's not supposed to be. I mean, I feel like that's kind of the B storyline, but it's more interesting. I don't need any more crazy-ass leaders. No, but I'm saying I feel like it's supposed to be the B. I don't know why, but I get the feeling like
it's supposed to be the A
to Maggie and Negan stuff. But
it's the A because it's the A because the Commonwealth represents the denouement of this entire show. Right, and the Commonwealth is a major, major part of the ending of the comic book, and will be a major. The Commonwealth is where the show is going. The Reapers, are a distraction. The Reapers. I consider them filler because they decided to do a 24-episode season and had to put something in. Like, right, we don't want to see 24 episodes of the Commonwealth or whatever. So anyway. But you're right. I think whether it's the A or is currently the B because it's still brewing while the Reapers are taking center stage. Yes, Eugene and Princess and Ezekiel are the most interesting part. And then Yumiko, I don't really care about that much, but she's taking the Michonne storyline from the comic book, so that's interesting to me too. You're right. That's the more interesting part. And then Maggie and Negan are kind of interesting, but I think really because of Jeffrey Dean Morgan's superior acting ability. Because Maggie, honestly, I kind of wish Maggie would get killed. Maggie's a gigantic bitch who nobody should listen to. Right?
This season, yeah. I mean, I used to like her, but it's like since they brought her back, she's just like all – I mean, I get that she's hardened. She's supposed to be, but she's not – there's a difference between being hardened and being unlikable. And they're making her very unlikable.
Yes, yes, they're making her very unlikable. And
it's very bad when you're enjoying Negan more than her. That's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that just proves that's bad.
Negan.
Half these episodes, Dog is the best character. So I don't know what that
says. I mean, they have made Negan a very much more nuanced character than he used to be.
Yeah, they've made him much better this season.
I kind of, like, while... I understand that, like, Maggie left Hilltop because she couldn't tolerate being around while Negan was alive, even though Maggie ultimately is the one who gets to decide if Negan lives. Like, Rick lets her kind of – like, remember when Maggie was going to kill Negan, and then she's like, no, I'm going to let you live in that jail cell and live with yourself because that'd be a worse punishment. And
See, I thought remember, Mike decided that. That's how much I remember. I don't remember that far back.
Well, I was reminded by, so Eric Kane is this guy, is one of the recappers of the show. He recaps for Forbes. And on his Facebook page, a commenter reminded everyone, that it was Maggie who negotiated the deal to go attack Negan's people while they were sleeping, unprovoked. Like, while Rick and Maggie led that together, Gregory was like, listen, if you kill the saviors, we'll let you live here. And Maggie was like, okay, we're totally down for that. Because Maggie was the one who was, remember when Maggie was like living at the hilltop and was sort of like having this like power struggle with Gregory? Maggie was part of the decision and really led the decision to be like, yes, let's go slaughter these savior people in their sleep and then everything will be great and we can live at the hilltop. And that sparks all these problems with Negan, right? And that's really what sparked Negan in the end to, and we never really saw Maggie deal with that emotionally, right? Like, we never saw Maggie take it. Rick and Daryl both shouldered a lot of, like, self-recrimination guilt over that. Maggie had a lot of grief over losing her husband, but I don't know. I also kind of wish somebody, like Aaron or Daryl or Carol would be like, Maggie, you've been gone for, like, 6 years, and, like, a lot of water's been under the bridge with Negan, and, like, he's still a pariah. He's still, like, an outsider and will never be a popular guy in town. But, like, everyone, like, accepts his existence as part of Alexandria now. And he did them a great favor by killing, like, Alpha, right? And he participated in a lot of bad shit, but it's like a cop undercover who has to, like, do drugs before he can, like, bust you, right? I just wish someone – I can't believe I'm saying this, but I wish someone would stand up for Negan just a little bit.
Well, right. The thing is I keep feeling like they obviously put Maggie and Negan together for the tension of what happened.
Yeah.
But it's like there's no, like, I would like to see some kind of conversation, not just, like, her disagreeing with everything he says because she needs to disagree with everything Negan says.
Yeah.
Like, that's not interesting. They're not even fighting. I mean, I'm okay if they're fighting, but, like, at least make it make sense. I don't know.
Yeah. So you're right that Negan saves her, like, I mean, he saves her life, I think, twice in this episode. And, you know, he grudgingly, while he's like, yes, we have to go, like, you're right, he does say, all right, Maggie, you decide what to do. And she's like, Negan, you're a jerk, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, okay,
he's like,
fine.
But you still
got to decide. And ultimately Alden is like, okay.
Alden kind of makes the decision for
a little
bit.
I think Alden is not dead. I think Alden deserves a real death. If he's going to die, I think he deserves Alden, you know, he's a former savior. I think either the savior, whatever they're called, the Reapers are going to find him and, like, bring him back to their place or whatever. They killed some people, but I think that, you know, that guy who is Maggie's sidekick who fights in a mask because everyone on the show wears a mask now, that guy who
the younger one?
When Maggie... Yeah, when Maggie busted into the whisper, the guy who fights with two knives who has a mask, it looked like he got kidnapped, not killed. I think they kidnapped him, and since I thought maybe Daryl got kidnapped because we didn't see him, but then the promo for next week, it looks like Daryl is, like, maybe trying to rescue them. I'm not really sure. But I think
with your first comment.
I think some people got captured. And Daryl might be captured, and this Maggie's sidekick guy is maybe captured, and some other people. Like, basically anybody who's, like, a speaking character was captured, and everybody who was, like, Maggie's extra people all got murdered.
Except for Gabriel, who we haven't talked about.
So Gabriel was off on his own. So what do you think of Gabriel? Gabriel was kind of interesting. He's another one of the few, turned out to be a good and nuanced character, right?
Yeah, this is the guy, this is where... I forget, what did the guy ask him to do? He wanted him, he thought he would let him go.
To pray with him. He finds an injured Reaper, and he's wearing, like, I don't know why he still wears his priest collar, because he, like, it's never clear to me, from week to week, has Gabriel lost his faith or found his faith? But the guy was, like, dying, and he's like, will you pray with me? And
he's like, nope.
He was like, nope. And,
yeah.
and he's like, but you're a man of God. And Gabriel goes, God isn't here anymore, and kills him. But Gabriel himself had been praying earlier in the episode, right?
Yeah.
Because Gabriel's injured, and he was praying, and then he refuses to pray and kills this guy. So it's like, I feel like Gabriel's faith maybe has become very restricted to, like, God should help Gabriel and the people he cares about, but then God doesn't, like, exist or, right? Like, Gabriel, I don't know. I'd like to maybe see more of Gabriel at like, some deeper, because he killed the guy in the anthology spinoff, that the anthology episodes that we watched, like, 6 months ago. He, remember when, that whole episode of him and Aaron getting
Robert
drunk
Patrick's
and he killed that guy.
Episode, you mean Robert Patrick's episode, right? I would like to see.
Killed Robert Patrick.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe see more of Gabriel and what his ideology is now. I mean, he killed that guy and it was funny, and yeah, the guy deserved to die. But,
He also
I
killed
agree.
The guy who was trapped
really
upstairs,
sure
right?
I'm sorry?
He also killed the guy. He also killed the brother who was locked upstairs in that episode.
Yeah, that's right. He did. I meant the guy in this episode. But, yeah, you're right. He did. He killed both of them. Yeah, he's definitely changed, and he's also definitely not that cowering priest anymore. I'm trying to remember. I don't know. There's something I'm thinking of, but I'm not sure if it's in this episode or the next episode, so I'll have to find out, and then I'll ask you later, because I don't want to, because I know you don't want to be spoiled, and I'm not sure, you know, other people don't.
Anybody else does,
Yeah, not a whole lot. I mean, not a whole lot really happened in this episode.
No.
I don't know that I love next week, but yeah. I mean, we're not getting into that yet, but
yeah. I think my favorite scene was of the four kids. So RJ almost never speaks, and he's like 8 years old now, right? So we finally see Judith, RJ, Gracie, and Herschel together talking and playing games or whatever. And they're kind of talking about how terrible their parents are, right? They're kind of like, oh, you know, they said they'll be back. And they're like, oh, grown-ups always say that so you won't be scared. Like, Herschel says grown-ups always say that so you won't be scared. And, you know, then, you know, they look
kind of the world they live in, though, like the things that they're complaining about.
But Judith says, like, our mom always comes back. But, like, Michonne's been gone now probably 4 years, maybe. And, like, abandon her kids, right? Like, it's ridiculous.
Is it supposed to be there yours? I can't keep track of the stupid...
I mean, it was only because Danai Garcia quit the show. Danai Guerrero quit
the
show.
Yeah, the yeah.
Right?
She's
going to
be in
the
movie, supposedly.
Well, if that movie ever happens, we'll see if that really happens. There's still no script.
But they want to suck money out of it, though. It probably will.
Yeah, but the show is tanking. Like, these shows are tanking in the ratings. Like,
you think that matters
anyway,
to AMC? I'm just saying.
It might matter to the actors if they want to be. Anyway, there's no script.
Yeah,
I'll believe it when it happens. My point is that it was totally not believable to me that Michonne would abandon those children to go after Rick, except that she was quitting the show, right? But she's a horrible mother. She abandoned those kids to, like, search for a man who might be dead, right? And Maggie leaves Herschel really at risk, I think, of they're starving to death and there's, like, a lot of dangerous people around. She leaves to go lead this mission that other – like, I just feel like all the parents – so Aaron is home with Gracie, but I just felt like that scene was really underscoring – I guess some people could read it as, like, gee, parents make sacrifices, but I just read it, like – these kids are so in tune to their parents' flaws, which are major.
That's true. I also, like I said, I think part of it is just kind of showing, though, too, like that they're in a different world than kids usually are, you know. But, yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
But a character, well, like we've seen a character like Carol, who was, like, really a very good mother to a series of children who all died, right?
She was a good mother until she killed the one, but yeah.
I mean, but that child was, like dangerous.
I'm not saying that child didn't deserve to die. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Tell her to look at the flowers and shoot her, so regardless.
I don't see Carol, like, maybe leaving her kid like that, right? To go on walkabout for 2 years to find, like, Like, yeah. I just felt that episode was like the kids are very in tune to like how, God, how much they're on their own at the age of like 7 because their parents are just so preoccupied with other things besides like protecting their children. Like,
yes. Although to be fair, Maggie really couldn't bring Herschel with her per se safely, but I feel like there should be like, and maybe they're just not showing it, but there should be like a den mother or whatever you want to say, like there should be somebody watching these kids. And it seems like because the parents have to leave them, that they just leave them and there's nobody there. You know, I mean, I'm assuming somebody's watching them, but they don't ever show that, you know?
I feel like, why did Maggie have to go? Like, did Maggie have to go on the run to the armory when they were getting the weapons, or could she stay home? Does Maggie have, like, a lot of people thought this was a stupid idea to even go to this cache of food, and she somehow, I'm the only person who can find it, and yet she can't find it without Negan. Like, it's just a cockamamie thing that is designed to just, like, this is why you and I hate kids on shows, because the kids are like an afterthought that they just decide stupid stuff to, like, keep Herschel busy, because Maggie's storyline is not really going to ever involve being a mother. Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right. Okay.
So I kind of really liked it that they actually had the kids show up and be like, yeah, our parents kind of, you know, whatever.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's their life. They do not have a normal childhood, but there should, I hope, be somebody there watching them that they're just not showing us, we hope.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, not the worst episode, not a season 7 level of crap, but not the best, yeah.
But fairly boring, yeah. All right.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's it for Walking Dead. And Beyond the Walking Dead is starting, actually, I think Fear the Walking Dead is starting soon, too. But Beyond the Walking Dead is soon.
Well, Beyond comes first, I think. I think Beyond comes first, and then Fear.
I should have the dates with me. I apologize, I don't. But I know it's coming soon.
I don't either.
Yeah. And hopefully it will be.
I saw an ad that was like, The World Beyond final season premieres like September whatever.
Final season?
Like,
there's only 2 seasons.
I know, yeah. They're pushing it final season.
Final season, yeah.
Should be like episodes 9 through 11.
2 out of 2 is not, I guess it's the final season, but yeah.
Mm.
So that's coming soon. Maybe it'll be a little more interesting. We'll see.
All right. Okay, well, I guess before we move on to this, I will play my audio clip, and I'm going to take my phone off a speaker while I play it, because otherwise it's probably going to, like,
reverberate,
because it's coming to my laptop. So let me take the speaker off a second. All right, now I'll talk in the microphone. Okay, so this is for the Lucifer interview for the final season, and I decided for the first clip to play Amy talking about singing and dancing in the musical episode last season. I cut off me because, I don't know, the question was kind of screwed up, but that's what it was about. So she's talking about the musical episode, and it's like a minute. So here we go, Amy Garcia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started out as a dancer, so that was actually really fun for me to go back and rehearse and work with professional dancers and train. Kevin Alejandro and I both were in the same rehearsal, and we were like kids in a candy store. We were so excited to learn the routine and practice it and have these backup dancers that make you look like way cooler than you are. And it was just so fun. The singing, I was a little nervous about, but yeah, it was so fun and exhilarating, especially the football scene, because I think we're racing against the sun going down, and it was like 200 extras and dancers and fancy cameras, and it was like a Broadway, we had to do like a Broadway number before the sun went down, and it was just such a high when everyone just showed up and did it, and we were like, oh my God, high-fiving, and it was great. But yeah, I mean, anytime I get to sing and dance, I'm like, sign me up.
There we go. And that was the first clip. I'm going to have to reload the stupid switchboard because it didn't upload my second audio file. But, I don't know if it did. It says it was 47 seconds. So I have no idea how long this is.
Right.
Okay, we'll play the next one at like 11. It's like in a half
okay.
an hour. I'll play the second part.
Clip.
I'm going to
okay.
look at this while I'm talking to you.
Okay, so what?
Let's talk about surreal estate.
To do next, the real estate.
No,
okay,
no. Let's talk about surreal estate because it's the better thing that we have to talk about. So
all
this
right.
was an episode where this was an episode where Luke is struggling with maybe you know they should go legit. I gotta say, I find the storyline where the news is reporting that they were the real estate agent for two houses where like murders happen to be ridiculous because I think if you look, like I live in a city of like 600,000 people, and I think if you looked at like all the houses where anyone was ever killed, probably more than one of them were sold by the same real estate company, right?
I'm not sure why they would blame them for the murder. I agree with that.
But anyway.
That being said, I think the case of the week is kind of interesting.
Well,
this is where they
take on a house.
Different.
Yeah, but they take on a house that they, like, he's struggling with, should we just go straight and just do normal real estate? And he takes on a house that he thinks is going to be, like, kind of a normal real estate house. And then, of course, it's possessed. Right? I forget exactly what's causing it, but it has some sort of long-standing demonic situation going on there.
I think the demon didn't want the owners to leave, so it kept them young, but it gave – I don't know why it needed to make them young to give them what they wanted, but I think the main gist of it was it gave them whatever they wanted to keep them there. So they stayed happy. That was
– yeah. I mean, that's a good point.
But why they have to
was,
be young, I'm not sure about that part. But
well, they're all 16, right? It makes them all 16.
If they're older, they wouldn't want to stay.
Well, I think the original first person that was trapped was 16.
Yeah,
I think that
fine.
Woman, the old lady, had been trapped in there since she was 16. And I think maybe the house thinks it understands 16-year-olds or thinks that you're happiest in your life when you're 16, which is ridiculous because is there anyone
or
more
maybe
depressed
just
and miserable?
Or greedy at 16, maybe. Because, I mean,
well, they're very selfish.
Like, yeah, because
I'll
I
give
feel
you that.
Like as an adult, even like the woman when she's older, like she's finally like, you know, it's enough. I feel like maybe a kid would keep going where an adult wouldn't. But I don't know. I think
there's
the
nobody more selfish than a teenager, really, except maybe an infant.
This is true.
Right?
Yeah. But I liked it. I thought it was weird and different, and I don't know. I really liked this one. And I liked, too, how, like, they had to look beyond the surface. Like you said, like, teenagers are greedy. But the thing is, when they actually look deeper on anything, like, everything was fake, you know? So it was
all
about that glamour, about that trying to think of the right wording for it, but about that shallowness, I guess, would be the right way to to describe it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was pretty interesting.
I kind of like
them all as kids.
Yes, I kind of like seeing the young actors playing them older. I think it wasn't all 100% perfect, but it's not like we're seeing like Oscar right? Like we've seen a lot of body switching movies when we see an older person in a child's body and a child playing the older person and how they try to, like, you know, okay, not a good example, but like in Freaky Friday, right? When like Lindsay Lohan is playing Jamie Lee Curtis and Jamie Lee Curtis is playing Lindsay Lohan. And I mean, I'm not using that as like an example of like an Oscar winning performance necessarily, but this maybe wasn't right there, but I think they kind of had tried to really nail their dialogue. You know, they kind of had Zoe down, and I loved how
Zoe kept calling her.
She's
the same actress for Zoe, so hopefully she nailed it. But that's because she was younger.
It was the same actress?
That.
Really? Oh, yeah, because she's very young. Yeah, it was. I liked how the boys kept calling her sad girl. And then, you know, they made – so the Luke one was the least – like, the one who played young August, he also was kind of, like, very nerdy and into gadgets, and they kind of had that well done. I thought the Luke kid, the young Luke, was the least like the older Luke.
I think that
Luke,
may be because he's the most developed, too, though, as a character, maybe.
Well, I was going to say,
you know
because
what I mean?
I was going to say because he lacks the strong personality traits and tics and idiosyncrasies that the other characters have, right? He's very, like, everyman normal guy, except for seeing ghosts. So
that's true, too.
There's not really a thing to latch onto in his character so much as with some of the others. So,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Of the character, the caricature so much.
Yeah.
He doesn't as much.
But. Yeah. So I didn't really like the end. I didn't like the part where he talks to his older self because...
Yeah, that was a little weird. They lost me a little bit there.
Like, how did that happen? Because the house, how would the house ever be capable of doing that? And there were times when it seemed like he was really talking to older Luke, but he really wasn't because, like, old Luke is saying things like, you can stay here forever, no one will ever let you down, no one will ever hurt you. Like a very, like, protect yourself, you'll never get hurt kind of thing he's saying, right? If I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't really think that's what Luke would say. Like, we see, like, we didn't ever see Luke really hesitate with Megan. Like, he's liked Megan since the moment he laid eyes on her. And asked her out relatively quickly, given that we're already in, like, the fifth or sixth episode of the show, right? Like, I don't...
Eight, yeah.
Okay, so, but, so I felt like that has to be the house. That's not Luke. Like, would Luke really say that? How could the house do that?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I took it that it was him talking to the house, but the house made himself kind of
look like old
into
Luke.
Him to look like him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of it was him dealing with his own demons. But yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be the house talking to him, and that's definitely how I took it.
Right.
So yeah,
and so
I don't think necessarily had to match up that perfectly because of that.
Well, and is this the same? Is this basically the conversation the house has with every teenager it traps? I mean, really, you could say this to any teenager. Like all teenagers.
Yeah.
Like. They feel deep feelings, they get hurt, they, like, everything that happens to them is the most greatest tragedy ever, right?
And, yeah, and you're like, well, you can avoid it by staying here forever type of thing. Yeah, you're right. Really, it would have worked probably with anybody, but it had a harder time with him, which also he may have been able to resist it more because of the connections with the ghosts or whatever that he has, too. So maybe it was because he was different that he – because they kicked the other ones out. I mean, he was the one it wanted. And I kind of wonder if it's also, like, more of an emotional thing, too. Like, it needs that more, like, emotional connection. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a guess.
You know,
but,
today I was flicking channels while I was supposed to be working. I was flicking the TV channels. And I flicked across. So Star Trek is on, like, all day, every day on BBC. And I flicked onto this episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where they flew into an anomaly, which happens, like, once a week. And they got their bodies turned into 12-year-olds, and they were, like, grown up. They were, like, 12-year-olds playing the actors. And I was like, oh, my God, I just saw that. And this is, like, a 20-year-old episode, so.
Yeah, we're
sorry, I just saw that. But,
no,
it's
funny.
So the whole other part of the episode was Susan, I almost called her Lauren, Susan going to visit Megan at the house. Like, Megan calls up, and it's like, Megan calls up, but it's the roadie who calls up and says, can you come over here, right?
I can't remember who was on the phone calling, but I know that...
Well, Megan
calls
up and says, I need to see Luke, and Susan's like, I'll be right
over.
Yeah,
I think that person was Rudy. But the point is when Susan gets there, it's really, a lot of it's really Megan, and she's like, I don't know what happened, the house has, you know, been destroyed, and somebody was here, but nobody was here, why do I have all these messages from Luke when I've been trying to get a hold of him? So obviously Susan kind of it hits her. Well, maybe the roadie's still there, and there were three of them because she sees their drawings. I enjoyed kind of how they had the sort of telekinesis thing back and forth of them. And I was wrong. I was going to tell you after, but you hadn't seen it. I don't know why I thought they couldn't go back into the same person again. So ignore that comment that I had given you last week.
Oh yeah.
But after when I rewatched part of it, I'm like, why did I tell her that? But anyway, I liked when they kind of went back and forth between the two people, and like when she used her telekinesis to
flip the switch,
to grab the device and then hit the switch once she swapped bodies, and that kind of tricked it. I thought that was kind of cool. And you know, got it killed, and it was good because it didn't drag on. I mean, it was nice that they had sort of that it took two episodes, but yet at the same time they didn't, you know, they didn't keep it going forever.
I'm left with a big question. Like, why is the house torn up? What was the roadie looking for? Like, the books are thrown around. Like, stuff is thrown around everywhere, right? Like, was the roadie searching for something? Or...
I
like what?
I don't know, but the roadies wanted in that house, and I think there's a lot going on with that house, and there's more. I don't know if you can hear that. My mother is snoring, and I'm trying to wake her.
No, I can't.
So
I can't
hear
that. Well, and the roadie made a comment like there's so much pain in this house, or there's so like many suffering people in this house, or something, right? Like the roadie wanted to be there.
There's a lot of supernatural energy / emotion / I want to be careful what I say, but there's a lot going on.
Well, we know
house.
That there's a hellmouth in the basement.
Yes, and that is also important. I will just leave it at that. But there's stuff with the house, and that's why the roadie's attracted to it. And we know that there was a lot of ghosts in that house too, regardless of the hellmouth. As
we've seen,
it.
Like
because you think about
in
even
every
just
window.
Before. Yeah, but you think even before, like when she was in that theater with the they were going to operate on her, or whatever. Like how many?
Ghosts
there were then. There were quite a few. So
and Luke's mother is there, and there's like all these ghosts in there. So we might still learn more about that. I also kind of like the way they've been developing Susan as more and more competent with the ghost business. And I don't mean because she is showing. So now she doesn't just have pyrokinesis. She has telekinesis also, which I think is new. Like, right? She had originally described to that teenage girl several episodes ago that she had pyrokinesis, and we saw her use pyrokinesis at the awards dinner like a week ago, right? I'm not sure I was aware that she also had telekinesis, which she exhibits in this episode. Is she becoming more powerful? Did I not know that, or is it kind of power?
I don't know if the pyrokinesis is maybe just sort of a form of the telekinesis. I don't know. They didn't really explain that, because that's where before when I had said about her light and fire, and that they commented that she did that, but they definitely she definitely has telekinesis. I don't know. I think she was supposed to have had it, but I don't think it was very clear before, because I feel like you did. I thought it was just that she could light things on fire or like, light stuff up. But she definitely is telekinetic. I don't know. I think that just maybe wasn't super clear before and maybe should have been a bit clearer.
Well, I kind of wonder, could she becoming more powerful as she's exposed to like supernatural energy all the time? And also as she is more accepting of the idea of supernatural beings as she's around it, right? Like when they first hired her, she was a little bit more like less of a believer, and she's much more.
But I was just going to say, but I feel like if that's the case, though, I think that maybe her being able to move the device or the switch or whatever, I think she'd be surprised. She didn't seem surprised. So I take it that she had this and they just didn't – it wasn't super clear. That's how
she
I take
didn't,
it.
But we also haven't really seen a download or a debrief of that scene. Anyway, I was just wondering about it. But I do like that, she – not only was she less of a believer in the early part of the season, but she was less competent and confident in, like, when August and Father Fred, is that his name, are doing their thing.
Now that
right?
I like, know his name every time, and I tell you, I can correct you. Now that you said that, I can't think of his name.
But she showed real, like, confidence and quick thinking and outwitted a roadie, a very dangerous roadie, and she, like, I like the
she
way they have sort of brought her along as being a more comfortable person and, like, really becoming a full member of the team. Like they all were very dismissive, except for Luke. The rest of the characters were very dismissive. I mean, Zoe was the most dismissive, but they all were kind of like, Luke's like, don't go in the house without us. You don't understand what's going on. And I like that they're slowly bringing her, showing her to be like a very, she's not just a good real estate person. She's really good at this other stuff also.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's
about enough of that.
Have something else to add.
So this was 8 of 10, right? There's 2 more weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's 2 more weeks. So, and I'm going to put up part 2 of my interview with Marie Steenwent next week.
With
and
who?
And then for the one who plays August.
part two of the interview. And then for the finale, I'll have up with Camille.
Are you posting the video of that?
No, that's already up. That's part one. But I have some more questions. It's going to be a written interview that part two I'm going to have up. I'm going to put up before next week. And then hers will be up for the finale because that interview isn't until Friday. Tennille, I screwed up.
Who's Tennille?
What's the character's name? When it plays Megan. That's what I said, the girl who plays Megan.
Thank you.
I had thought it was this Friday, and I can't read my email, apparently, because I sat there and was like, why is she so late? And, like, at this point, I know that if somebody's, like, more than 10 minutes late, it's my fault. Today is not September 10th. So, yeah, that was it's this Friday coming up.
Cool.
People can send me questions if they have it. But anyway, so.
Alrighty.
Well, I think we can move on to Roswell now.
Yes, it shouldn't take long to discuss Roswell.
Would you like to say something about
Roswell?
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that the first three-fourths of it, I thought were, well, maybe the first half of it, I thought was decent.
Really?
I don't know. It kind of went downhill. I guess the main thing I want to talk to you about is, I guess the main part of getting out of it is that the whole story that Jones told him was a lie and that he is the leader. Am I understanding that right? Is that how you got it?
Yes. Can we acknowledge that? I'd just like to point out that it was weeks ago that I said I think Jones is the dictator and Michael is his son. Called that like 3 weeks ago. And it was proven with the sword that this is the case, that only someone with Jones's DNA could touch the sword, which I think means Max could touch the sword because he's in Max's body and Max touches it. Right?
Well, yeah, I think we knew Max could touch the sword.
Because Max is a clone, And so
my,
Michael
you know,
was
what
like,
I think funny is I was right inadvertently because I told you last week that I thought that I did not pick up on that for whatever reason, did not think that guy at the company was bad, that was helping out. I mean, just for what, but that was just more, I don't know, for whatever reason I was addled and I didn't think he was bad, but I was right inadvertently, or at least it seems to be.
We can talk about him a bit. I think he's more of a guy who has good intentions, but is going about it a bad way. As opposed to being a straight-up bad guy.
Right. I think what's important about that and what I want to know and understand about that is the fact that we kind of briefly talked about the fact that these people stole the sword, which we said didn't make sense because they weren't supposed to be able to take it. Now, supposedly, these are the people that injected Kyle with something. So are these aliens? Because I definitely got the opinion from last week when they showed these people and he took the sword back, I thought they were human, but I don't know how else they would have lifted the sword. So,
okay. Half the time I watch the show, I have no idea what's going on. And I'm not sure. Okay, I'm 90% sure that the show is just terrible. But 10%
yes,
of me is
I'm
like.
I'm 90% sure that.
I'm 10% like, am I not paying? Because it's so bad, I don't pay enough attention. And is that why I don't know what's
going
on?
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I really miss something. And then you're like, no, I thought that too.
I texted you in the first like 15 minutes of the episode. I texted you and I said, I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on. I feel like I missed an entire episode, except I didn't.
But
I
didn't.
Right? I think the show is getting worse, and they're making huge leaps without explaining them at all. And I had no idea what was going on for much of the beginning of the episode. I don't have any recollection of Jones being in the mindscape with Maria. And I'm like, wait, why is Jones in Maria's mind? She's in a coma in the hospital.
No,
he
was in there last week because he was trying to find out about her grandmother, but that's the part that didn't make sense.
What's
we didn't
your
understand,
remember? Yes, we didn't understand.
Yeah,
that.
And that's the part that we still didn't understand. And why he needed something from her. And I'm guessing that it's leading to next week because she takes her into that diner or whatever in her mind.
Yeah.
I don't understand what information she has that's so important, but I think that we just haven't gotten the information yet. But, yeah, some of it just – like, I don't even understand how he got in his body in the first place. I think I don't know if I missed that explanation of how he took his body or why
we talked.
I mean, the thing is, he looks like Max. Why does he need Max's body? Like, that to me was very odd to begin with, because I get that Liz is saying you need to find a way to separate you from Max's body. Well, why is he in Max's body? Why didn't he just pretend to be Max? That to me is way more convoluted. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, why would they write in he hops into Max's body when he looks exactly like Max?
When they're clones, yes. Yes. That means, like, why? Why did you switch bodies? That's a very good point, Jamie. That's an excellent point that we didn't really discuss last week. Like, why do you have to switch bodies when you have the exact same body? Like, you're more identical than twins.
Yeah.
You're clones, right?
Yeah, and yes, and second of all, why did he take Max's body? Like, did he just take the pod, or did he take Max? Because I thought Max was just, like, in the jail cell.
In the cage.
But maybe Max was in the pod, because when they went in the cave was empty. So I'm thinking he must have taken Max, too. Well, no, wait, he's in Max's body. Forget I asked that. But then where's Jones's body, then?
Exactly. Well,
maybe he ate him. I don't know. That would make more sense at this point.
Because I thought Jones was in the cage, not in the pod. But maybe they put him in the pod to shut him up?
That's what confused me, because I thought he was in the pod, and then I assumed before, when we found out that he was Jones, I assumed that he just left Max in the cage, because I had even said something to you like, they'll find Max because they're going to go back in there. But then I forgot all about that, and we found out he's in his body somehow,
yeah.
Which I don't understand. Unless he, like, absorbed his body or something. I don't know.
I think last week I said we could go back and watch the previous week's episode to really
examine
it. But who cares, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to.
Yeah. So I am also growing quite bored with the mindscape. Like, to me, too much of it is taking place in the mindscape all the time. I also don't love – one reason I don't like Jones also is because I never like a character who is so all-powerful that no one can beat them, right? Like I have some problems with Captain Marvel because she's overpowered and, like, almost invincible. And so, like, Jones is kind of like that. Now, I guess Michael and Izzy – and perhaps Maria and Rosalinda seems to be becoming a powerful alien. Like, she's got powerful, like, not mind reading, but she not only can she go in the mindscape, but now she's got this thing where she can hear, like, vibrations and whatever, right? And so,
yeah, that
I know that's from
mine. I kind of liked how she was working with Michael, finding it, and he was teaching her.
I kind of like that. I kind of don't like how everyone is turning out to be part alien. I mean, I know it's because she was in the pod for 10 years, but. I mean, she is kind of a better character than a lot of them on the show. She has a little more, I don't know, depth to her character, but.
Yeah, I think her and Kyle are probably the most interesting,
is
a problem.
I guess they will together find a way. I guess something with Alex, the whole Alex storyline. So, yeah, about his boss, whose name is Captain Fernandez or something like that. So he's Kyle's uncle, like that Kyle never, like I still look at the part where he's Kyle's uncle that apparently Kyle never knew, nobody ever knew about. Like the Valentis are the number one most prominent family in Roswell, but no one knew there was an uncle.
Yeah.
Who,
and again,
like,
we'll mention again, it doesn't make sense why he needed to be his uncle, because I feel like that's kind of like
pointless.
The thing with Max switching bodies. Like why? He could have just been somebody who knew him. We didn't need that other than they had the scene that his DNA was similar, like it's irrelevant.
So Alex, Kyle's not, he's in a coma. I forget how he got in the coma. Did they inject him with something, or did
I think
he
said injected him with something, I think is what he said, or at least that's what he said happened.
The attacker injected him, so he'll probably end up being an alien. But Jamie, I'm pretty sure if you're in a coma, you can't just roll a hospital bed into a barn and you'll be fine, right? Like,
yeah.
There's a hospital bed with monitors and shit hooked up to Kyle in a barn, and there's nobody watching him. Like, when they come into
play...
Well,
this guy works for some high-tech company. He knows what he's doing.
Well, he works for, like, a secretive, shadowy government organization, but
no,
there's no one there. There's no one there.
I know.
Like, they walk in and Kyle's, like, alone in a hospital bed in a barn.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
The only thing I was going to say is I did kind of like that they, don't know if I want to say I liked. I thought it was interesting that they connected the fact and said that that other crazy guy, the one that almost killed him, that he had worked for this place and that the radio made him go nuts. I thought that that was kind of an interesting twist.
Yeah, and then Alex was like,
why
are
you
going to
tell me I'm so crazy?
Then the first job you gave me is to work on this radio that made a guy go nuts.
And he's like, well, it would have taken a long time. I can't help you fix it in a couple days. Yeah.
I don't understand why that guy wasn't straight with Alex in the first place. And Alex asked him, and he gives this, like, ridiculous answer, like,
yeah,
I didn't want
Alex
to scare you
him.
Off.
Alex
or I
was helping him. It is kind of strange that he lied, other than it was like a red herring. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like what Alex needs to do is Alex needs to go talk to Michael and tell him what's going on and be like, I think this guy might be good. This is what's going on. Because, I don't know. I feel like at a certain point, he's going to have to introduce him to Michael because now he knows.
I
mean, he even said he's in love with an alien. So he already knows Michael is an alien, and he doesn't exactly deny it.
No, Alex doesn't say, like, what you're talking about. And probably this guy has known that Michael and Isabel and Max have been, like, how long has he known that they've been around? And he doesn't really care
well,
that they're...
Well, he knows Michael. We don't know that he knows the other ones are aliens. We know he knows Michael's an alien.
Well, he has to know because the three of them appeared in the desert together one night, right? The three of them show up at age 10 in the desert together.
Well, if he knows that, but he probably does.
Everyone in the whole town knows that.
That's true, too.
It's common knowledge in town, and he works for the NSA or Dark Sky.
I feel like, drive shaft. I feel, though, like he is a good guy because I feel like he could have done something about that. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's told people he knows this, but I don't know that – I don't know. This is whole
– I don't know. I'm also
I'm just
kind of having
like
a hard time with
– like, this show is
so
stupid.
I'm also having a hard time with this radio that Kyle's father made that can talk to this other radio that some other guy was setting for years, maybe before Kyle's father even made it.
Here's my question. Is it like it's almost like a long range communication device, right?
Yeah.
That's powered by the alien
tech.
So I don't know if it necessarily was made and that's the question. I don't think it was made by alien. Was it made by them with alien tech? I mean, was it actually an alien radio or did they just stick the alien tech in there? I don't know that it matters because laws don't make
it
sense.
It looks like
an
old timey 1950s, 1940s, 50s human radio that someone stuck alien tech inside, right? Probably the original people in the flashback, like whatever their names are, Patricia and whoever, Dolores, whatever her name is, Patricia,
their
two mothers.
Like it's somehow connected to these ones that hurt Kyle. That's why I'm so lost, because I still don't know if those people are alien or human. It may only make sense if they're aliens. But they made them seem human.
So. Are those two guys who stole the sword?
How did they get the sword?
Are they not? Well, are they the astronomers? Like, everybody's talking about the astronomers whose car was found by the side of the road, and the astronomers are dead. And I'm like, are those guys the astronomers? They're fake astronomers, right? I think they were,
masquerading. I don't
even remember
them saying astronomers, so I missed that.
Yeah.
They kept saying the astronomers.
It's so bad that,
like
whatever.
He stole the sword from, that's all I know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like this show, but here's the thing. A lot of shows won't go deep into mythology and into the sci-fi and all this, and I feel like this show had potential, and it could have been done well, but it's like they have so many different things going on. They have made the storyline so convoluted, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
They need to, as much as I'm usually, when I talk about shows, I like the mystery, you know, I like the twisty storyline, they need to do work character development, because we say it every time. It is not good that the main characters are unlikable. Stop.
Well, and you know who's
and make the characters likable, develop them a little bit better. That's
well,
my
you know who
main
I really
concern.
Hate. I really hate Max / Jones. And
me too.
Well, and part of the reason I mean, he's a bad guy. You're supposed to not like him, but I feel like the writing is not good enough to get to show us when we're looking at Jones and when we're looking at Max. And so they've written him, and the actor plays him as this arrogant, sneering, overacting, ridiculous dickhead that, like, I just want to punch his face every time he appears on the screen. And I just feel like they're not able to give Jones any personality except this sneering, like, ridiculous, like, I want him to start twirling his mustache at any moment, right? And I feel like better writing and better direction, maybe some stronger acting.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I think the actor's done a fairly good job playing both parts. He is kind of overacting it, but I do feel like that's in the writing and it's the way they're having him do it. My biggest problem is, and I've said this over and over again, I feel like in order to care about what Jones is doing, you have to care about Max, and I don't.
Yeah.
I have said before that Max and Liz are like some of my least favorite characters. This is a problem. I mean, to me, that is the biggest problem of the show. They are supposed to be the two people you're supposed to care about, and they're the two people I don't. I don't dislike Liz as much. I shouldn't say I don't necessarily dislike her. I don't like I never necessarily loved their storyline of the two of them together. Like, I never necessarily felt it. I think that's part of the problem. But it usually seems to me that I'm like, oh, okay, who cares? Like, I don't know.
They're supposed to be like a super couple who are meant to be ever since they're teenagers. And, like, I guess he's loved her since a teenager, but he was too much of a popular kid to actually be nice to, like, an immigrant kid or something. Like, he never really, like, together with her or really pursued her before. Like, it's supposed to be this, like, meant-to-be thing, but
and maybe
they come off.
It's more I don't care about the relationship. It's more I don't care about the relationship, I think. It's not so much I don't like them. It's that I don't care if they're together or not, one way or the other. It really
well, it's not... Look, you're supposed to be rooting for them, and you're supposed to believe they're meant to be, and they've been in love with each other since they were teenagers. But it doesn't play that. It actually comes off that she's a jerk and he's a doormat, right? I'm like, why would Max keep like pining after? Like, I don't see what he sees in her, and she continually does everything everybody tells her not to do, and is a jerk. And then he's just like, you know, like when Jones, like watching Jones come on to her. And her, like, sort of flirt back at him, I wanted to throw, it was just painful, and I wanted to throw up. And I was like, okay, I know they're both acting.
He had to know.
Like, he knew.
I'm thinking he knows what she's doing.
He knew, and she knew, and she knew he knew, right? But,
I kind of thought that, too.
But it just played like, I don't know, it played like, they're always like I don't want, that. Like, yeah, I don't see what he sees. I don't see what they see in each other. I don't believe that they're meant to be. I think the world would be better off if they broke up and didn't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
I don't care about them. I think you're right. It's a problem. If you don't like them, then it's a real problem to watch this show.
Yeah. And I mean, I said I have liked Michael and Isabel more, like, as time's gone on.
Yeah.
I did not like them as much before. I have liked them more this season. So that's a good thing. I still think Kyle and Rose are the best characters, which is still a problem. But I don't know per se – I don't find them super likable, but like I said, I don't know so much that it's that I don't like Max and I don't like Isabel. It's that don't like Max and don't like Liz. It's more that I don't care about them together, which is supposed to be the main driving force of the show, which it's not.
Yeah.
There you go. I think that the original was
all right.
And I find more, as much as it's not even my favorite relationship on a show or anything, I almost want to say that I see more chemistry between Michael and Alex than I do between them sometimes. And I never really liked Michael and Alex to begin with. So, yeah. Because
There was more chemistry between Max and that girl he was sleeping with last year, that other deputy he was sleeping with.
The other kind of was.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many problems. The thing is, it had everything going for it. I feel like it had potential. It was good. It was decent last year. Like, we were talking about it, and it had some good parts, and I don't know. It just this year just has gone downhill. I don't know if it gets another season, but I don't know that I'll be watching it if it does.
Yeah.
Unless I'm hate watching it like we do with other shows.
Hate watching, yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So,
All right.
Let's get on to your next Lucifer thing.
Yeah.
Real quick.
I'm going to play the clip now. This is the last clip I'm going to play. And the rest of this interview will be out, I should say, I don't know exactly what day, but the show premieres Friday. So these interviews will be out after that. But this is her talking about, and I left me in here too, but about her talking about how she feels about the ending of the show. Let me turn this off speaker again. Oh, crap. Wait a second.
Okay. I thought it said I was offline.
Were you satisfied overall with the ending of both that she got and the show got?
Yes. Yes. I was satisfied with both. I was satisfied with the show. I watched it as a fan. I binged season 6 till 3:30 in the morning. And I just kept wanting to watch one more episode and one more episode. And I think it's a beautiful, bittersweet ending, but I think they really handled each character with so much care, and it was organic. It felt natural. It was beautiful. Definitely a tearjerker, but it just evolved so naturally and organically that I can't imagine an alternate ending.
There we go. Again, that was Amy Garcia, and people can catch the rest of that interview soon on scifivision.com. All right. Let me put my speaker back.
Cool.
I actually didn't even turn it off right in the middle. I hit speaker in the middle because I realized it wasn't off. All right. So what are we going to talk about next? Are we going to talk about What If? Is that, I think that's next.
Yeah. You want to talk about What If?
Yeah.
Get AJ back on here.
I am. Hello, ladies.
Hi. So, sometimes I feel like AJ's been silent, so he should have a chance to talk first about this show.
Actually, I like to hear what you guys say about What If first.
Oh, because you read
I'm
the books
more,
and we don't. Yeah.
I'm more
okay.
Comically inclined.
Okay, Jamie, you love Doc. You love you some Benedict Cumberbatch. So,
yes.
What do you think?
I had told you guys the other week when I had read that he wasn't going to be in it, and I was all like, this sucks. And then I read suddenly he was in it. Apparently it changed, because I did find the other articles. I'm not crazy. He wasn't doing it, I guess, and then for whatever reason decided to do it. So that made it 10 times better. Not that I wouldn't have watched it anyway. But I thought that this idea was really interesting because, I mean, the whole – Doctor Strange, I mean, the whole thing starts because of his hand. That's the most important part of the show. That's what starts him becoming Doctor Strange. So I thought the idea was really an interesting one. And I thought it was cool how they kind of, you know, showed how that could have splintered off. I thought it was a little strange how, I can't think of her name, but the one that's like his the boss, you know.
The Supreme, Tilda Swinton? The Sorcerer
yeah.
Supreme?
Yeah, you know who I mean. I was a little surprised.
No,
ancient
the ancient
one.
Her name is the Ancient One. The Ancient One.
The
yeah.
Ancient One, that's it. I found the idea that she had split him in the same universe a little strange. I hadn't seen that coming.
Yeah.
But I liked the idea that they kind of showed how his life would have been so much different. And it was almost like I found it interesting, too, because in the movie – he is very arrogant and not a nice person for a lot of it. And it almost made him, to me, seem more of a caring person when it happened in this way. Because in the show, he cared only about himself. So I thought it was interesting in how it still, even though that was the case, that that's what caused it to devolve. I mean, I kind of would have liked it to have had a happy ending, but at the same time, I think it was kind of interesting where the whatever his name is, the Watcher guy, is like, you know, nope. You screwed up yourself. That's why you don't mess with time. You know, we all know that. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting. I liked what they did. I really did. I'm trying to think of anything else specific. He just kept making it worse and worse and worse. I liked how they had Wong, and I liked how he gave him, like, that protective spell. And I liked kind of how they showed the showed it, like, the metaphor sort of physically because he kept breaking through those symbols, whatever you want to call it. I thought that was kind of cool. But, yeah, it was neat. And I like how we talked before how the other one had a different, like, animated style. This one definitely had a more now, I've only seen the original or the first one. I haven't seen the other two yet. But this one definitely had a more newer animated 3D animated look style. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So I watched it twice. When I watched it a couple days ago, I kind of didn't like this episode and thought it was kind of boring, really boring, and I really didn't pay attention to it. And so then I went back
and rewatched it today because I was like, oh, I need to pay more attention to this. I thought there was some stuff I really liked and some stuff I really didn't like. The whole part where Doctor Strange is kind of a jerk. Like, Doctor Strange is not my favorite Marvel movie. I think he's a jerk for always. Like, he's still a jerk after he becomes the Supreme, I think.
He is very arrogant.
And, you know, I'm a little, if I recall that movie correctly, like he's a jerk to Christine. And so the very idea that his life would be ruined if Christine died is not really the character that we know from the movie. Like, I don't think he, like, him losing, not being able to be a surgeon is obviously much more important to him than, like, his girl, right?
That's what I was saying. It almost made him, like, a better person losing her, though. Like, I mean, it's what
her to die
up more, but, like, he became a nicer person. Like, he cared about somebody else instead of himself, and that's what was his downfall, which I think is kind of ironic and interesting. I don't know. I thought it was weird, but...
The idea that the female character has to die for the man to be a better person is problematic for me. Aside from that, I felt like this episode was a little bit derivative in that, like, how many times have we seen this, like, on Doctor Who, right? Any time travel thing we've ever seen, like, this was not groundbreaking territory in time travel. We have seen so many shows about going back in time and screwing things up, and the idea of what they call an absolute event, like Doctor Who calls a fixed point or something like that in the timeline. But anyway, like, none of that is new. It was a little derivative,
but that's kind of always going to happen in time travel. I mean, there's always going to be
something. You can have newer ideas of time travel, but I think this really signals, I mean, so much of this is probably setting up what's going to happen in the next 12 movies of the MCU, right? I did really like, I also have a problem with, like, how do you have two timelines in the same universe, but whatever. I did kind of like the way he cycles through, like, every, if you're a McAdams fan, like, seeing her die 20 times, and it's interesting that she doesn't always get killed in a car accident, like, she killed her from a heart attack, or she gets shot by a crook or whatever, but at any rate, when he was cycling through every way she dies, kind of reminded me of in Endgame or one of those movies where he's, like, looking through all the billions of possibilities of how to defeat Thanos, and he finds, like, the one way they can do it. And I kind of like the end. Like, I liked I liked the bringing back the big octopus. I liked the animation a lot, particularly the Watcher. I mean, the Watcher, I got some problems with the Watcher, but we can talk about that, and AJ can explain to me maybe, because I think the Watcher is in the comic books, and maybe I don't totally get the Watcher's deal. But I hated it the first time I watched it. When I rewatched it, I liked it better. It's absolutely heartbreaking and depressing. Like, oh, my God, she dies 20 times and then the world ends anyway. It's very depressing. And the whole theme of it is, like, love will break your heart, love will break your mind, and then the world will end. The universe will end. So thank you, Marvel, for making me feel like I needed a Jack Daniels by the end of it, right?
Yeah.
So I liked it a lot.
Comic man.
Yes, I liked it a lot. It might actually be my favorite episode. I might like it better than the T'Challa one. I don't know. Maybe I looked deeper into it because, you know, I mean, it's a classic story of, you know, he's trying to save her, and he finally succeeds only to lose her anyway and destroy the entire universe. Like, he didn't just destroy the planet or something. He destroyed the entire universe. And I think the biggest thing about the episode is the Watcher says, you know, reiterates that he could step in, but he's not going to because saving one universe isn't worth jeopardizing all the other universes. So I think that's really important in the fact that, like, what Strange has become and done in this universe can affect the other universes if, you know, because he's so powerful now. Like, he's so powerful now that
Who? Wait, he's in a bubble. He destroyed the entire universe and lives in a bubble by himself. So is he really
but
too powerful? He can't
absorb other people's.
But that's the thing. That's how this ended. Do we see him again next season and find out, does he, because he is powerful. He is so powerful. I mean, all that energy he got from all those different creatures, across the multiverse, like we call the tentacle monster again. He is extremely powerful right now. I mean, he changed a, what did they call it? You just said it, Karen.
A fixed point in time, or an absolute event, they call it, I think, in this.
Absolute event. He changed an absolute event, which is unheard of. To be able to do that, it's just, the problem is, once again, with Doctor Strange always, is his hubris. He is a very arrogant character. He's always been a very arrogant character. And yes, while Jamie says they kind of made him more caring, it's still his hubris.
That.
Because
he still thinks he can fix it.
All right. So what we saw originally in the movie is she actually turned him down to go to that. So
yep.
She asked her, and I'm not going with you because it's not about us. It's about you, which is why I'm not going. In this reality, she goes with him and she dies. Now, his hubris is why he goes looking for, there's got to be a way, trying to figure out the meaning of life and everything. His world's been shattered because this is something he can't fix. He can fix anything. He's a surgeon. He can do anything. He's the best surgeon in the world. He can fix this somehow. There's got to be a way. There's got to be an answer, and he becomes, he becomes the Sorcerer Supreme, and he's still haunted by the fact that I'm a sorcerer now, and I can do all this magic, and I still can't save her. But I have this little time thingy here. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it kind of begs the question, is she the love of his life, and he wants to fix it, or is he just guilty and wants to fix it? Because in the movie, is she really the love of his life?
Person and fix it.
I mean, he's driving, she's killed, he's like, no. I mean, he obviously likes her or whatever, but, I guess that begs the question, does he really, can't live without this person he loves, or can he not live with this thing that he can't fix?
Number two.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It's
that he can't live with him not being the most powerful person?
It's more
ever.
About...
But that was before he...
It's about him not being able to fix it. It's not about her. She's not the love of his life.
Yeah.
In that moment, she is, because, it's absolutely about trying to fix it.
Yeah. And then by the end of it, so it wasn't a very original idea, and yet I like how at the end of it, so he kind of fixes it, but then she dies anyway, but she dies, being horrified by him, right? Because he's absorbed all those creatures, he looks like a horrible monster, which I felt like was just a metaphor for her seeing that he'd become an even worse, 10,000 times worse asshole, basically, right? What he's become. Mm-hmm. And not only does he lose her, but he loses her as she's repulsed by him.
Yeah.
And not in any way grateful for being, we've seen this also too, we've seen many shows where someone's brought back to life. Buffy jumps to mind first and is like, why'd you bring me back? I was in heaven.
Yeah.
Screw you for bringing me back to life, right?
That's right. Mm. Yeah. Something
like, oh my
else
God,
with,
I was in heaven.
With me pointing out how powerful he is now, he sensed the Watcher, which people don't sense the Watcher unless, really have connection on a cosmic level.
Because the Watcher is supposed to only watch, right? Watcher
right.
only watches
yes.
and doesn't interfere, and that's the voiceover every
week.
He
even warns him, though.
But, well, here's the thing. The Watcher, when I saw the Watcher was there, so it's interesting, AJ, I've never considered that. You're like, he's so powerfully sensed the Watcher, because I read that as the Watcher getting too close. And I was thinking about this idea that, the effect of the observer upon the thing it's observing, right? Which we, it's like a thing in like I know we read a lot about this when we were watching Lost and thinking a lot about quantum physics and stuff like that. And the idea that the very act of observing something affects the situation and changes it. So I felt like the observer was watching too closely, but I like, so your explanation that he's so powerful that he sensed the watcher is an interesting other side of that coin, and probably is correct because you read the comic books and understand the watcher better,
yeah.
Maybe.
And
yeah, Dr.
The watcher,
Strange better than I do, right?
Any of the watchers, you know, Uatu, which is, his name's Uatu, and he's not the only watcher. He's just the watcher that they focus on. But any watcher, they could be standing next to you and you would never know it. Because think of them as a ghost or a spirit or something, you know. You're not going to know it's there. And that's, you know, but because of strain, you know, not only because he's so powerful, but just because his connection with the cosmos and everything, you know, and the fact that he is so powerful is why he's able to detect them. Like, the first time he sensed him when he was gaining the powers, and he, like, looked around, and he didn't quite see him because he wasn't quite powerful yet. And then at the end, he sees him. He actually sees where he is. And at that point, he's actually, you know, he's got that, he's kind of, like, part of the stars. And he actually, you know, has a conversation with him, and the Watcher's like, tough shit.
Actually, the Watcher's like, gee, I wish I could save her and punish you, but, you know, you were warned 100 times. In fact, I think the Watch, is it the Watcher who says, and this is like really, the Watcher, no, it might be, it's the Watcher who says it, not the librarian.
He says something to him about this.
He says, I can't paraphrase it correctly, but he says, like, messing with time will only lead to destruction.
Yeah.
Right? Something, and I felt like, oh, that's basically what the next 12 movies are going to be about, right? Like, the next movie coming out is like it's all multiverse for the next phase of the MCU, right?
Well, no, the next movie is The Eternals, but the one after that is Spider-Man, which is definitely multiverse.
Yes, Spider-Man is definitely multiverse. The Eternals, they have some great powers or whatever, but I mean, we're definitely going multiverse with the next phase of the MCU, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
MCU or just a Marvel movie? Like, is it still connected?
No, they're in the MCU.
What's that?
The Eternals, right? It's not.
Yeah.
Jimmy asked, is it a straight up Marvel, like, unrelated movie, or is it part of this, like,
MCU
plan?
No, it's all connected. It's part of Phase 4. It's all connected.
Okay, so I got to see that too.
So I went to see Shang-Chi last week, Eternals trailer. I mean, to me, the Eternals looks kind of bad, but we'll see. Books are excited for it.
When I saw the first trailer for the Eternals, I was kind of like, eh. And then actually the trailer I just saw at Shang-Chi, I thought, I actually was like, ooh, this looks like it's going to be really good. It's got a great cast.
Okay. It does have a great cast.
You'll appreciate this. Something funny about the Eternals. So I knew Kit Harington was in it, but I did not realize that the actor that played Rob from Game of Thrones was also in it until
Rob. That's not his wife. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know she was in it. No. Interesting.
No. Wait. I said.
Not,
I said
no. His
Rob.
Wife. His what? You said Roz. You said oh Rob. I
no, I said
Roz,
Rob.
Like a prostitute.
Rob.
Rob Stark.
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, the actor. I can't think of the actor's name, but he's also in it. And it's funny because I'd seen him in the preview, but I did not recognize him. I recognized Kit with the short hair, but I didn't recognize the guy that played Rob.
And I was confused also because his real life wife, who played Ygritte, is named Rose. At any rate, I just felt like when the Watcher's like, oh, if you mess with time, like, you're only going to, like, lead to destruction. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is where we're going with MCU, like, in the next phase or whatever. Like, we're definitely getting more multiverse, you know, right? I mean, what if is basically playing with multiverse, kind of. But this is the first episode, this episode, like, fully focused on, like, messing with time. I think part of the reason I maybe, you know, I just don't love Doctor Strange. I didn't love the movie. It's not one of my favorite MCU movies, and, of course, not the greatest, but, and this, so I don't love all that mystical hoo-ha. Like, I guess for my superhero movies, like...
So there you go. That's your problem.
Powers,
I say you don't like the mystical hoo-ha.
Yeah. I don't. Like, powers
never
are okay, but...
the mystical hoo-ha, as she calls it.
I don't. I also have a problem with Scarlet Witch, because, like, Scarlet Witch is introduced to us as a mutant, like an X-Men-style mutant, but then she turns out to be a witch with powers going back to, like, hundreds of years ago witches. Like, and I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, she's actually a witch? Or, I didn't know she was really a witch. I still got to watch
it. Is she a mutant?
Yet.
You haven't watched WandaVision? I'm like, is she a mutant or is she a witch?
No, I haven't.
And is being a witch magic or is it mutation? I'm like, what the hell?
Well, see, the thing is, the thing is in the MCU, because the MCU, she's not a mutant, actually. Because mutants don't exist in the MCU yet.
But okay, but in Marvel, the X-Men are part of Marvel.
In the comics, yes.
Right.
Well, actually, it's very convoluted. Yeah, in the X-Men part of it, she'd be a witch or a mutant. But the thing is, in the comics, it's very convoluted.
They took Hydra serum in the movie, right? Sokovia is invaded, and they take the Hydra serum that makes them have these powers. She's not a mutant,
basically,
right? She's like Hydra or Hydra, whatever. Yeah. I mean, they kind of are mutants. Like the Hydra serum brought out their mutation because her brother Pietro is Peter, the speedy guy from like Xavier's School for Children, right? Like, isn't Pietro her brother the same as Peter the X-Man?
Yes. No.
Yeah. No.
Peter the X-Man.
The guy that Evan Peters plays, who moves super fast.
Yes.
Is it a
yes.
coincidence
that
Pietro is super fast and has the same power and the same name?
This is the problem. I'm going to fix this real quick. They're the same characters, but because Fox owned the rights to the X-Men and all the mutants, and
yeah.
the MCU didn't own those rights, they both... Both entities created the same characters, but they're allowed to be mutants in Fox's version because Fox owned the right to the X-Men and everything mutant. Whereas the MCU couldn't make anybody that's supposed to be a mutant, they had to explain it a different way.
Oh, because they had no rights to the
so
mutation X-Men.
But it's
stuff.
The same character.
Yeah, but they're the exact same characters.
And that's how Deadpool winds up in that horrible Wolverine movie where it's all about expressing mutations. And then he also winds up in a Deadpool movie where it's about having cancer and, like, taking a treatment or whatever.
I didn't realize Deadpool was MCU.
Which is funny because they're both – well, what they did to him in Wolverine was awful. That's why we had to have an actual Deadpool movie to fix it.
Yeah.
that was so bad.
But anyway. Yeah, the mysticism baloney is really hard for me. I guess in terms of my, I don't know why I can accept mutations and I can accept that Thor is a god and I can accept that, like, gamma radiation or spider bites or whatever, but I just can't accept magic for some reason. I don't know. It bothers me that Doctor Strange, it's all magic that happened to him. And
you know what?
He came over from Harry Potter.
Kind of magic. We're all superheroes.
But you're okay with Harry Potter?
Well, they have rules in their world, and there's magic, but there's no mutation. I just feel like adding magic to the whole superhero thing was sort of, I don't know, it bothers me.
You
because
know what, Karen, it sounds like, no, I get it. I get it. Because we sound like...
so believable, Karen.
But no, I get what she's saying. Because how many times have we watched a TV show... about a sci-fi show, you know, with all this crazy stuff going on, and then something more normal happens, and we're like, that's not believable.
Yeah.
No, but Karen's never heard that kind of stuff.
Anytime they have a vision or magic or something, she always doesn't like it.
Hallucinates. I'm always like, So he's magic and he's a jerk. So, you know, there's two, like, that's why Dr. Strange is not among my favorite. So I will say, I will say this episode had some of the best voice acting of the series so far. Now, Benedict Cumberbatch is a pretty experienced voice actor. He's done a lot of voice acting, mostly in shitty movies. Like, he was Smaug in the Hobbit movie. Well, he was in those Hobbit movies, which were bad, right?
Out of the other ones, I guess it was. But
okay, the Hobbit should never have made three movies. The book is pretty slim.
Yeah, that all agrees, and the book is kind of boring.
And he played Smaug and somebody else. And then he was the Grinch in that horrible Grinch movie.
I liked the Grinch. I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. The Grinch is an excellent 30-minute cartoon. It did not need to be a movie.
No, it didn't need to be extended that long, but...
But anyway, and he's done a bunch of other stuff, too, and he's experienced as a voice actor, and it showed, right? I felt like he, like of all the people that have been in every Marvel movie ever, he's probably the only person who could really play two versions of himself animated, and they sound like two totally different characters, right? Like, I think he did a really good job of making them to be two different people without, like, reducing it to kind of voice gimmicks or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
didn't
he didn't come in a funny voice or whatever, right? So I thought he was pretty good. And I thought, like, I mean, so who else really talk? I mean, the other people don't really talk that much, but I thought the acting was decent and bad. And it, of course, it really helped that every single person, they didn't have any substitute voices in this one. This is one of the first episodes where they didn't have to bring in anyone to cover for a film actor.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah, it's the only one.
Well, there weren't that
many
characters in it, though. I mean, they didn't, you know, there wasn't that
many.
Well, they
got Tilda Swinton, Rachel
McAdams. They gave them all the money.
They got, what's his name, who played
Wong.
Wong, the four, like, all four of the major characters.
Yeah.
Even
Tilda Swinton.
Even Christy Everhart, the news anchor, that was, what's her face?
Oh, yeah.
Same actress from Iron Man.
Hey, I actually know who that is now.
Yeah.
I'm on Iron Man 3, by the way.
Oh, you are? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Oh, the bad one.
Yeah, they all showed up, which really helps. So, well, it helps because they all worked together in the past, right? So I think that might also help. I don't know really how you do voice acting, but that seemed to help to me.
In a booth. They probably didn't even see each other.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Now, Jamie, you haven't seen Shang-Chi yet, right, Jamie?
No, I have not. I'm hoping to see it as soon as I can. I don't know that I'm going to get to see it by next week, but I will see it as soon as I can. But,
well, since it just came out, I think it's fine for us to table it for like another week.
Rewatching the Marvel movies. I've been sitting here watching Marvel movies. I don't know what the heck I did. I did something on my back. I pulled it. So I can't sit at the computer as much. So I've been sitting here. Well, that's why I've been part of the reason why I've been watching Marvel movies. I have TCA tomorrow. I can't. But so I'm up to, I was saying to you guys, I skipped Captain Marvel because I've seen it twice. And I skipped the Hulk because I just don't like the Hulk. And I don't think it's really relevant to the other ones. But other than that, I'm going in chronological. So I'm getting there. I'll finally understand more of it, hopefully.
Well,
it makes a difference
that's great.
In the order, I would say.
But I told you, I believe, that for Shang-Chi, you don't have to see any other Marvel
movies. I'm not doing it for that reason.
It's you're doing it because, but it's a brand new origin story and stands on its own.
Yeah, cool. But you know what? I did find it interesting when I found out that they were in Iron Man. The Ten Rings or whatever was in Iron Man. I didn't know that. I mean, I've seen Iron Man, but I've seen it when it was first in the theater, and I didn't really care, if I'm honest. I wasn't really interested.
Yeah, seeing Iron Man 3 will actually help because there are connections to Iron Man 3.
There are connections, but if you hadn't seen them or haven't reviewed them recently, it would really be okay.
It wouldn't have killed you.
Well, I'm not done with it. I just started it. So.
Well, and also, for whoever hasn't seen Shang-Chi yet, there are two after credit scenes. So you got to stay till the bitter end.
Yeah, I always do that. All right. Okay, guys, you talk about
All right.
All right, Jamie.
I think I've.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys later. Have a good week.
All right.
All right.
Yep, have a good week.
Talk to you next week. Bye.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, so last week we didn't talk about, the second episode was called, was it Thirst? We talked about Cape Fear, the first episode, but we didn't talk about the, it was a two-hour premiere, but we only talked about the first hour, and so we got Thirst, and then this week, or it was called, was it called Pale, and this week is Thirst, or last week was Thirst,
Pale.
And this week is called,
there, one of them
was
definitely Pale. I think,
last
yeah,
week,
yeah, there you go.
Episode two is Pale, episode three is Thirst. So.
There you go.
Pale picks up, I think, right after he eats the pill, right? Like, in, he eats the pills in episode one?
Yeah, probably towards the end of it.
Right? And so, and he
well,
gets
anyway.
Kind of, like, really inspired right away and whatever. So this week picks up after Daddy is, like, dealing with, like, having eaten the pills and whatever happened after that. So I rewatched it today. No, yesterday or something. I rewatched it before I watched the next episode, so I could, like, I had only watched part of it when I had talked to you last week. So anyway, so how did you feel about, I don't know, you want to talk about hour by hour or the whole entire story? However,
talk in general about the two episodes. All right. let me start by saying, I want the pill. Give me the pill.
Actually, I thought of both you and me because we both write, and I was like, I mean, I don't write. You write creatively. I write for a job, and I was like, oh, my God, how many proposals could I win and how much money could I make? And then I was like, oh, my God, AJ
me,
writes all these creative stories. He could, you know.
Give me the pill. There's none of the crazy side effects. I know I have enough talent that I wouldn't become one of the Pales. You know? And there's alternatives to killing people to get blood, you know? Like, it's a TV horror show, so yeah, obviously they're going to kill people to get blood, you know? I like, you know, it's funny, in the second episode, my one thing is like, but why does it also change their teeth? And then we meet Billy Lord's character, who's a dentist, who's like, yeah, I came up with this idea, you know, I make a moldier teeth so we can put the caps, and I, you know, make razors, you know, edge your teeth up so it makes it a little easier. I'm like, this is brilliant. I was like, there are none of the side effects. You can still go out in the day. You know, life is normal. You're just, you know, really creative.
Human blood. Okay, that's a serious side effect that you create human blood.
Yeah, that's one side effect that isn't the end of the world.
No, I mean, it's not super easy to get human blood, but yeah.
I have robber blood
well,
bank.
You could drink animals. So we have seen a lot of dead animals, and we know that the Pales are drinking animals, and it seems, I mean, so, how'd you feel when the child takes the pill? I mean, we saw that coming, right?
I totally saw it coming, but as soon as she took it, I was like, oh, this does not end well. I know this isn't going to end well. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, and so, and that's a big, you know, so they're vampires, but they're not vampires, but this show is trading in vampire tropes, right?
Yes.
From every step of the way, Pales, go ahead.
I would say the thing I love about it is they're not shortchanging us with this. They're not just like, okay, this is how it is type of thing. Like, they realize they're telling a vampire story without them being vampires, so they're explaining everything. Like, you know, I just mentioned the teeth.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just lost my train of thought. There was another vampire trope that
they
explained away.
Daylight. Well, they haven't explained the daylight, but they did explain away the teeth are sort of explained away, and it's implied that if you stop taking the pills, you lose the bloodlust. I don't know if that's true or if that's a lie. Because Belle and the Evan Peters character, I forget his name, they're like, oh, we come out here in the winter and we take the pills, and then we stop taking them and have normal life in the summer.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting concept that you could drop in and out of vampirism, or in that vampirism is always almost always nowadays a metaphor for addiction, that you could drop in and out of addiction so easily.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's true. Like, could they be lying to try to
minimize it? I don't think they are, and I'll tell you why. There is an innuendo in the second episode after we meet his agent comes to town. Oh no, maybe she's on the phone with him.
Who I love. She's one of my favorite characters.
I forget if she's on the phone with him or if she's just coming to town. But there's an innuendo that Quentin Tarantino has taken the black pill. Because she says to him, she says, Quentin wants you to write this thing for him. And he's like, wait, me? Quentin writes all his own stuff. And he says, he wanted me to tell you that he recently got married and he can't write the way he used to. He said you'd understand. And he's like, son of a bitch. So you can stop taking the pill and lose bloodlust. I totally believe that's the case, because also Evan Peters makes a comment earlier, which there are so many fucking dick jokes in these two episodes. I was cracking up. Evan Peters makes a joke about if stopping to take the pill, you won't be able to write at all. You're going to lose your creative ability if you don't take the pill. He's like, it's trying to fuck with a dick full of Novocaine.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this show is amazing. Like, and since I'm on the subject, how many times did you laugh every time you heard somebody say the dick doc?
Oh my God, the dick doc, which was hilarious. But I got to tell you, if I was employed by the Provincetown Tourism Board, I'd be very, very unhappy with this show, because I think I said when we talked last week, I was like, oh, this town is full of vampires and it's so bleak and it's so gray and no one's around. And it really, like, it's not a good picture of Provincetown. But the more you watch it, it's a town completely of meth addicts and vampires and, like, hustlers, like, under the, right? Like, sex workers, everything about this town is horrible. But I do love the dick doc, although, I mean, everyone apparently, I mean, it might be pretty vacated now that two people have been killed under the dick doc in like 2 days.
Yeah.
The dick doc is an unsafe place.
And it was even funnier.
Go ahead.
What's her name? I'm blanking on people's names tonight. The sheriff.
Adina Porter. I forgot the sheriff's name, but
Adina Porter. Yeah, it was even funnier when Adina Porter said "Dick Doc." Like, I was just like, "Oh my God!"
It's like whatever, even the chief of police calls it that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was like some of the stuff they've said in the, like, it's so funny. Like, this whole season, like, Evan Peters is just chewing up the scenery. I mean,
and then they sang again,
and that was great. Yeah. And then they threatened her, and she's like, I know who they are. She's like, but I don't care.
Yes.
Leslie Grossman's character, Ursula.
Yeah.
Her character is Ursula. Yeah.
Ursula.
I gotta forget Ursula.
I mean, of course she knows who they are. They're apparently, like, hugely famous, right? Like, hugely famous people. I mean, I do think that Evan Peters and Frances Conroy are having a great time playing these roles. I mean, they're fantastic roles, right? Especially, and I forget Evan Peters' character's name. I can remember Bill, but not. So one thing that interests me, though, is, like, so they've got this, like, incredible resource that makes them, like, you know, unleashes their creativity to like a magical degree, that they write masterworks. They're really, you know, they talk, they're really more interested. Evan Peters is definitely, I think, more interested in the fame and the money. Like, Belle sometimes says things like, you're like, remember when they first take, I can't remember daddy's name either, but when they first take daddy
Henry
to Henry, when they first take Henry to go kill someone to feed, right? And they're like, oh, we cruise Craigslist and we, like, whatever. And then they kill them, and then, you know, coming home, like, Henry, how do you feel? And he's like, I feel great, except for the part where I just killed some innocent people or whatever. And Bell says something like, look, you are going to put incredible words that will be remembered forever. Like, history will remember the art that you're going to create. And you allowed that meth head to become part of it, which is far more than he ever would have done for the world. So, you know, on the one hand, I sometimes feel like she's a little more of an artist and he's a little more into the money. But on the other hand, I mean, one of the side effects of this pill is that you don't just become a unleash your creativity and become a fantastic artist. You also become like an arrogant jerk. Like, they're very superior to everyone around them, right? Like, their arrogance is far beyond that of Dr. Strange in some ways. But it's also interesting, like, so I mentioned the way that vampirism is often a metaphor for drug addiction. And the way they're kind of addicted, like that scene where Belle is asking Macaulay Culkin if she can pay him extra to suck his blood, and he's like, no, and she becomes very violent the moment she's, like, when he says no, she's like, you know, how about I just kill you or whatever. Like, she becomes extremely violent when she might not get blood. And she's the only person we've seen so far who actually eats babies. But, and they're so dismissive of, like, there's been multiple references to the meth epidemic, the meth problem. It's not an epidemic, it's not contagious, but the meth problem on the tape. And you know, Evan Peters says, oh, since meth came around, it's so much easier. There's all these people that nobody cares about. And we just kill these people and the cops just think, like, drug dealers killed them and nobody cares. And, like, they're addicts, but they're so dismissive of addicts, right? And I felt like when I was watching it, I felt a lot like, remember when Whitney Houston was like, coke is for rich people, crack is for poor people. Like, I feel like that's how they act, right? Blood is for famous people. Meth is for losers. How do you like Macaulay Culkin in this show?
You know, it kind of throws me a little. The first episode, I'm like, I forgot it was him. But now that he's been a little more prominent in the second and third episode, I think I've only ever seen him in Home Alone. I mean, it's weird. He just kind of looks like a blown up version of Kevin McAllister, who's a meth
head. He made a bunch of movies. He made those movies. He made, like, My Girl, right? He made a bunch of movies as a child. But he really hasn't worked as an adult that in any prominent way for a long time that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And he's made some stuff, right? In fact, Kieran Culkin made more recent movies, and then he appears in those. I think he's pretty good. He does still have that very, I mean, he looks exactly the same. He's filled out, but he has that very young look. I think he's got a good look to play like a meth head sex hustler.
He does look like a meth head. He does look like a meth head.
Yeah. And he's definitely game. Like, I think his acting is fine, and I think he's, like, game for the role.
Oh, yeah.
And they do seem to be on a little bit of a roll of casting, like, American Horror Stories cast both Kaia Gerber and Paris Hilton, and now Macaulay Culkin is much older, but it's, like, another, like, young superstar or whatever. I think it's pretty good. Belle and Evan Peters represent, like, so it's interesting to me that they even share the pills. Like, why do they give Henry the pills, whereas they won't give them to someone like Macaulay Culkin? I mean, it's obviously because of their classism, and right? Like,
I think, like, yeah, it's definitely classism, because Henry is a TV writer. They know he's not great, but they know who he is, he's got a family, and whereas Macaulay Culkin, he's a meth head, so he's not worthy. You've already got your addiction, you can't have ours. you know,
right?
Like they look at him, you're a meth head, you know, I mean, obviously he's got some talent, but they kind of, I think they looked at him as you're a meth head. If we give you the pill, you're going to be a pale, which he turns out not to be, but they still have, you know, it's totally classism.
Well, but there's at least 6 or 7 pales running around town. So
yeah,
they have given the pills to other people, or people have stolen the pills, or somehow other people have taken these pills, right? So there's pails around.
I think it's more a case of theft. But you know, like Bell says at one point that, you know, they're pass, you know, they got to get a handle on things. They're passing the pills around like Tic Tacs.
Well, she's right. And there was no, we're not aware of any consultation. Like, for some reason, the Evan Peters character decides that he's going to be like, hey, Henry, you want to have these pills or whatever. So it's a little bit, I don't know. It's interesting to me, like, you know, if I think of it in terms of a vampire story and the decision to create another vampire, right? And then, you know, the child takes them, the daughter, who we kind of knew was coming, because she's this huge perfectionist, you know, whatever. Then immediately Evan Peters and Belle, God, I can't remember Evan Peters' name, but immediately they're like, oh, having a kid? They're like, are you out of your mind? You gave it to the kid? Are you insane? And he's like, oh, she stole it. She took it. I didn't mean it. And they're like, okay, get a grip on her. And then as soon as he leaves, they're like, okay, wait, I killed that kid. Like, we can't have a kid. Right?
Yeah. Evan Peters is awesome.
Is awesome? He is.
Austin.
Austin, yeah. Like Austin, I don't know, the idea that he went and created Henry, and then Henry goes and creates, accidentally, his daughter Alma gets created,
yeah.
Right? I mean, that kid's going to have to be killed. I mean, the kid is a menace. Like, you saw her eyeing up the blood in the hospital. Looking at the blood and wanting to, and the father's,
and then,
like, and how?
And then she kills poor Adina Porter.
Yeah, that. So apparently,
I totally saw that coming too. I was like, oh, this is not going to end well for Adina Porter. I'm like, she's done.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to see her die so quickly because she's such a an amazing actress, but I was pleased to see who the chemist is. That the chemist is, I forget her name in 1984. She's Candy from Pose, the woman who plays the chemist. She was in 1984, and she was in, I mean, she's
was
the Ryan Murphy person, right?
She was the the director or camp, one of the camp counselors. I forget what exactly.
Yeah.
She was at the camp.
She was a camp counselor, but she turned out to really be a nurse, a journalist who was like, right, nurse, I think, or something, who'd been a psychologist who was studying. But in Pose, she plays Candy, and so I always want to call her Candy. I was sorry to see Adina Porter go, but it was great in the same episode to see her appear as the chemist. It was interesting because one episode earlier, Austin seemed to really be like, okay, we only have to use one chemist and nobody knows who the chemist is and the chemist won't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out that they totally know the chemist, and the chemist is a little, like, comes to them and it's like, listen, you guys, you got to deal with this person. I can't, nobody can come knock on my door. I feel like in the end of this, when this couple more episodes, I feel like Ursula is going to be the ultimate winner of this whole thing.
Yeah, she's definitely, she's aggressive.
Yeah, and she's not at all taken aback or weirded out, but, like, she figures it all out herself, right?
Yeah, she's totally on top of things completely. Well, like she says to Macaulay Culkin's character, she's like, listen, she's like, I know who they are, and they're in this town, and this person's been to this town, and Henry, who was good but not great, is all of a sudden writing Oscar-nominated type stuff, you know, and you wrote this stuff? Like, come on. Like, yeah, she's not a dummy. She figured it out really quick. And you know, it goes to show, you know, the Hollywood types aren't weirded out by anything. So there's that. Two things.
Which is Yeah.
One, we had a little cameo from Dennis O'Hare in the episode.
Yes.
Haven't seen him.
Yes, we did.
And I don't even know the last time we saw Dennis O'Hare. Was he in Armageddon? I feel like he had a cameo in Armageddon.
He might have been in Armageddon, yeah.
I feel like we definitely saw him in Armageddon. But yeah, that was a fun little role.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I got a big kick out of was it came back from a commercial at one point, and it started playing Change by the Deftones, which I got a huge
mm-hmm.
kick out of. And I don't know if this was intentional or not, but it was one of the more prominent songs in Queen of the Damned.
Oh, was it? I haven't seen that
yes.
in a long time. Wow. Wow.
Queen of the Damned, well, see, I pick up on it right away since Queen of the Damned is one of my favorite movie soundtracks. I absolutely
oh,
love
yeah?
that whole soundtrack.
Oh, I'm
going
to look into that. Huh. Good check into that.
But I saw, as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, it's got to be intentional. Now, here's a vampire-type show, and it, you know, that song is very much associated with Queen of the Damned. I was like, it's got to be intentional. Like,
yeah.
It can't
yeah.
not be.
Right. It has to be, yeah. Well, everything's intentional on this show. There's nothing in a Ryan Murphy show that's not
yeah.
intentional. Do you
very
think,
true.
So I like the part where Henry is like, okay, I'm going to go kill some people on my own, right? And he does the whole Craigslist thing to try to find
oh,
them
no.
to kill. And the tables are turned. Again, if I worked for the Provincetown Tourism Board, now there are people making snuff films and, you know, and they're, you know, they're not just making it, they're like, we're going to violently sodomize you and then kill you. And so Henry, you know, he gets away only because of his teeth. His new teeth help him to, like, break the rope. And then also,
yes.
I feel like when you take the pill, so you become, like, super creative, but you have bloodlust, but you also, like, I think you're, like, a killer. Like, he really, like, deftly escaped from them, right? Like, he rips, like, the girl's throat out, and then he, like, shoots the other guy. Also, we saw
yeah.
the child. Alma knew exactly how to stab Adina Porter in the throat with a pen or whatever. But anyway, he turns
yeah.
the tables, and he kills them. And so I'm thinking, so I know, like, the reason he was able to escape was because they were bickering. Like, the assailants were like, did you turn the camera on? You didn't turn the camera on? Are you a jackass? What's wrong? And they're, like, bickering a little bit about the camera, right? I wonder, did he kill them on camera? Like, was that like, are we going to see that come around to haunt him?
Yeah,
like,
you know, I thought the same thing.
Dreamed?
Yes, I
yeah?
thought the very same thing. I wondered that myself because I didn't know if it was just if they film it and then play it or if it's a live stream. I thought the same exact thing that I think he might have just outed the community.
Yeah, in which case it will bring down, like, more law enforcement investigations on them. And
yeah.
also Bill and Austin are going to be like, all right, you got to go, right? You got to be killed.
Yeah. Now, here's something else about that scene.
Yeah. Which was unnecessarily horrible, yes.
Yeah, well, just her describing what was going to happen and then seeing, you know, and then them pushing him down over that table. It reminded me of Pulp Fiction, the Bruce Willis part of the story when those cops are raping the guys. You've never seen Pulp Fiction? Then never mind.
No, but there's a scene where cops bend guys over a table and rape them, apparently.
They take these criminals and they rape these two guys. Well, the plan is to rape the two guys. Bruce Willis turns the tables on them and takes them out. But they're videotaping
oh.
it to watch, you know,
oh.
to watch later. So
well, it's interesting go ahead.
You might be going where I was going to go next. It's, you know, the Quentin Tarantino comment, and then
yes.
this, you know, this scene reminds me of a Quentin Tarantino movie.
That's what I was going to say. It's interesting that, like, that you say that in an episode that references Quentin Tarantino. So it may be intentional, right?
Yeah.
A little homage.
Or that Ryan Murphy.
Tarantino, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was. I really think It definitely felt like an homage to him. In a peculiar way.
I think he may have accidentally live streamed it, right? Like he may have accidentally live streamed
it. Yeah, I think he definitely did.
I definitely
think it's going to come back to bite him. No pun intended.
Bite him, haha. And I think it's a little bit of Belle and Austin's fault for like creating this new vampire, whatever he is, right? This new addict. And not really teaching it. Like, they just taught him, like, it's okay to, like, go on Craigslist. Like, I mean, okay. Particularly as a woman, a single woman, I would never go on Craigslist and find someone that I want to buy a locked iPad from and then show up at their house by myself, right? Nobody would, right? Like, or anybody that you meet online like that. So it's very, I mean, I guess it shows his desperation to get blood for his daughter. And actually, let me sidetrack. This confuses me because when Austin and Belle took Henry on their first murder, he asked how often they do it, and they said once a week, and we can like split. I think they said they can split a body once a week, and then Belle's like, I want a snack in between, and I have some. She talks about like getting a sip from Macaulay Culkin or whatever. Watching this show, it appears that Henry and Alma are, like, starving every day. Like, we saw Alma drink, you know, when she drank that bowl of soup, the bowl of blood, that, and then I think it's the same day where she's like, Daddy, I'm hungry again. Like, those two are hungry all the time, so I don't know if, like, there's more time going by on the show that I'm not noticing. Or it's because they're young?
I think it's
vampires.
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination of them being young, you know, new to the addiction, and I think more time's going by than we realize, maybe. Speaking of the bowl of blood, that scene, you know, all right, here we go. Talking about you're not crazy about all the what'd you call Doctor Strange?
Mystical
the whammy what?
Mystical
hoo-ha. Mystical
hoo-ha. Yeah.
Perfect example of something I'm going to nitpick that's kind of silly.
Yeah.
But we're watching a show that's in the vampire lore, okay? I had such a problem. He's got a thermos of blood, and he pours it into a bowl for her to eat like soup. Why not just get rid of the fucking thermos?
Like, why can't she drink out of the thermos? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what is he doing? I'm like, this makes no sense. And I had a problem. I'm like, it bothers me.
Yeah.
It's mystical
and
hoo-ha.
I don't know. Mystical hoo-ha. And I don't know what they intend to do when mommy comes back, right? Like, mommy's in the hospital on bed rest. Like, a couple things going on here. Setting aside the fact that Belle likes to eat babies and often asks, you know, Sarah Paulson, Karen, to kidnap babies for her, which is maybe the most horrifying thing about this entire show. But, you know, she's not going to accept this. And it's definitely implied that she doesn't have talent, right? Like, you know, I kind of love it's not subtle, like, kind of mocking of Instagram culture and how, you know, she's like, oh, you know, my job is important too. I won that Instagram contest. There were almost 100 accounts competing for that contest.
I know.
Right? It's kind of...
I heard that and I was like, oh my God, you don't have any talent, do you? Karen's
right?
got more talent than her because we saw Karen, those couple of paintings from Karen did. Which were actually, you know, really good. And, you know, it's really funny. Like, I could totally see by the end of this, her the wife becoming a pale.
Yeah. I mean, the wife is like, you know, and she's all like, you know, actually was like, my job's important too. Like, we're a two-income family. And Henry's like, oh, yeah, whatever. Sure we are. Right? Like,
yeah. I mean, or I could see Alma cracking mom open and being like, here, you're useful now. I'm going to drink you.
Alma's the biggest jerk of all. Like, talk about, like, they don't just become talented, but they become, like, superior, arrogant assholes. Alma's kind of the worst,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Although Henry is a little like that also. But
I mean, she's, and well, that's the thing. I mean, she's a child to begin with. She's, what, they say she was 9?
Yeah, I think she's 9.
So, I mean, she's a,
yeah,
she's already a brat.
Yeah.
She's going to be, you know, she's a brat, I mean, and now she's a brat. She's a prodigy. So it's going to make her even brattier.
Yeah.
And now she's addicted to blood. Talk about a superiority complex.
I mean, I think she might kill the mother, really.
That's what I'm saying. I could totally see that.
Do you also find it hilarious that the owners of the house hired someone based on Instagram to decorate your whole house? And I wonder if those people will show up. Like, do they know that their whole town is full of, like, vampires?
Oh, they've got it.
Right? Like, they hired you.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's still unexplained, and what is still really talked about a lot on the internet right now is the red lights in front of people's houses, which, I mean, you noticed that probably in the opening episode. And you know, when they walk on the street, there are houses that have a red light bulb out front. And what does that mean? And there's speculation that those are houses that have, Bell's house had a red light. So there's speculation that this is like how they signal for a food delivery, so to speak, right? That they're like,
right,
a vampire, I'm hungry, or...
red light special.
Yeah, red light district, right? I don't know how I got there from talking about the mother, but I don't know. On the other hand, I feel like for Lily Rabe to be killed, like, is there a possibility for her to be like a, for lack of a better word, a hero or a survivor of this story, right? Like, are they going to kill Lily Rabe and her baby? While already we've seen, we never saw the baby, but we've pretty much seen a baby be food delivery in this episode, right?
Yeah.
And not this episode, in the last episode. Like Lily Rabe being pregnant with a very much wanted baby, like, where is that going to go? Like, will she get killed? I don't know. I mean, I could see it both ways. I could see her taking the pill and turning out to be a pale and not be talented. I can kind of see the great joke of her turning out to be the most talented person,
like,
maybe. Would be hilarious. Or her killing them all in the end. I don't know. That could go a bunch of different
ways. Yeah, I don't know. Definitely going to have to, yeah. And actually, you know what's funny is, you know, she won this Instagram contest. And then we just had this cameo of Dennis O'Hare's character, who is a decorator.
Yeah.
So why didn't they hire him?
Right? You've got a really famous decorator in your town, and you hire this Instagram lady.
Unless
that's already pretty nice. Yeah.
As we're talking about this, unless, let's think about this for a second, okay? Out of hundreds of people, she won this Instagram contest to come to this town where celebrities come to take a little black pill to be really good, even, you know, for great people to be amazing, okay?
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if these homeowners, they come back and they turn out to be, obviously, pill takers themselves.
Yeah.
And that this was a setup. Like, it was intentional to bring them there for this purpose.
To bring Henry there.
Like, kind of like,
or to bring,
kind of like they're, kind of like, yeah, kind of like they're kind of like recruiters in some way, shape, or form.
And their plan was always to bring, yeah, maybe. I mean, because their house is actually pretty decently nice already, right? Like, do you really need to hire buddy to do this?
I mean, Belle and Austin zeroed in on Henry immediately, you know?
Yes, they did.
So
yeah.
I could be completely just overthinking everything, but I feel like there's got to be something more there. Oh, and something I wanted to say before, when you were talking about taking Henry out and not really training him, that's a classic vampire trope right there, is, you know, some old vampire makes a new vampire and then either dies or just abandons them, and then they're like flailing, going, "Okay, guess I got to figure this out on my own."
Yeah, that is a thing. Like that, like irresponsible in making a young vampire and not training them correctly and not, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, perfect example, like Anne Rice novels. Lestat is made a vampire, and then his maker commits suicide that night, you know?
Yeah.
So Lestat's like, fuck.
And then without any kind of guidance, yeah. And then, you know, later to make a child vampire, and, like, the other vampires really condemn that, like... or even like, so this horrible, horrible show, Discovery Witches, that Jenny really likes and I kind of really hate, has a lot of vampires in it. And I feel like part of that show is like you shouldn't be creating new vampires without having it sanctioned by like, I don't know, the governing body or your maker of your, you know, whoever made you or whatever. But this idea of like you can't go around making other vampires willy-nilly. It's one thing to, so it's interesting on this show that you can't bite someone and make a new vampire. Like you give them a pill.
Yeah.
Right. Is the way that you make a new vampire. But I don't know, the pill is a little bit of a, I don't know, it's interesting. I don't know. The pill, like, I feel like people often are not guarding it carefully enough. Also, go ahead.
That's what I was going to say earlier. The bloodlust is explained. It's not just like, oh, you have to drink blood now because you're like really, yeah. Austin actually explains to Henry that the pill, while making you, you know, super good at whatever your talent is, it also depletes the body of all the nutrients it needs, which is why you need to replenish yourself by blood, somebody else's blood, because it has the nutrients blood has the nutrients that you're being deprived of. That's what I was going to say.
Right.
So that's I really appreciate that. Like, they really thought this out and I appreciate the fact that they're explaining all these different things. They're not just saying this is the way it is. They're explaining why. Which
right.
a lot of shows don't
yeah.
do.
Yeah. And they're explaining, yeah, that does, you're right, I didn't really think about that, and that did make a lot of sense that they're giving us a little more information there. So we'll see. I mean, I do feel like a little bit like they're careless. Like I talked about Austin and Bill maybe making vampires a little too easily and a little too quickly. But I also feel like, why is Austin not keeping that shit locked up in his desk? Like, how easy was it for Macaulay Culkin to break into the house and just, like, steal a bunch of pills, right? Like, they're laying around.
It was in a false bottom.
All right, whatever. Macaulay Culkin found them in 5 minutes, right?
He did find it pretty quick.
He found them. It's like he knew exactly where they were, which is funny because we've seen him as, like, he's a – Bell is his customer. Austin is not his customer. But he – I mean, I guess, whatever. I'm not going to criticize this level of writing that I should have seen that a little more. I mean, I guess he's been in the house or whatever. But they're not really safeguarding these pills, which theoretically are very hard to get from only one source on the entire planet. And they don't charge anyone for them, right? Like, there's no – they gave them to Henry that we've seen. Yeah.
Well, because the
right.
– I feel like they are, like, not so much charging as investing into the production of – because I guess, you know, I get the feeling, like – that, you know, what we've seen, Bell and Austin are definitely the financial backing for the chemist.
Yeah.
I got to believe, you know, and just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean that at some point, I mean, right now they're like, oh, we're going to kill Henry. So I don't see why, down the road, if things hadn't been falling apart the way they are, I could totally see them being okay. Listen, here's the deal. Now that you're famous and have all these millions of dollars, you know, to keep making the pills, we need investors. Like, you know, that would have been a conversation for a later date. Kind of like give them the
yeah.
taste and then hit them up.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
you know what it
okay,
is?
Good
Everything,
point.
Everything's so, falling apart at the same time, you know? It's like, it's one of those, like, it's the
yeah.
perfect storm. It's like, not only are they having this problem with Henry, but now Macaulay Culkin's character is stealing them and handing them out like, you know, jelly beans.
Yeah. They, like, had a good deal going until they started giving it out too much. And I think, you know, I mean, there remains the question of will Macaulay Culkin convince Karen to take it? Karen is clearly a meth head and infected with maybe some diseases. And yet she's like, no, I'm not taking it. Like, any, she's like, anything I do is better than that, which I don't know about that. Like, she kidnapped a baby and gave it to Bill to kill,
yeah.
right? So, which seems to me to be a very risky thing. It's one thing to be like, oh, drink all the meth heads you want. Nobody cares if they die. But you kidnapped a baby from somewhere? Wouldn't cops be all over
yeah.
that shit, right?
You know what was funny was when her and Macaulay Culkin were talking, and he's like, I'm not contagious unless we, like, bone or something.
yeah. yeah. I mean, so I feel like so Sarah Paulson and Lily Rabe are the two, like, characters of the wild cards right now. Like,
yeah.
Sarah Paulson consistently expresses that she's not going to become a vampire and, like, she's not going to do that. And yet in this episode, she was very much like, I'd like to be a famous painter. And she clearly has talent.
You know what
and
I
then
could
there's
see?
The mother. Hmm?
Yeah.
I
and could
then
see.
The mother who has no talent, but maybe has the greatest
yeah.
reason to, like, fight, right? Pregnant with a really
wanted
child.
Probably not going to happen this way, but I could see the last episode. I could see, like, after everybody's been killed or hauled off to jail or whatever, because that's the thing. Like, you don't even have to kill them because they're not deadly if you know they're coming. You know what I mean? Like, these are
yeah.
still normal people that can be still killed in a normal way. Still put handcuffs on them and take them off to jail.
Yeah, they have no superpowers,
so,
really.
Yeah.
Except for file.
So, after this whole, you know, after everything's been shut down and everything, I could totally see, like, within the last couple minutes of an episode, see Karen come out of, like, nowhere and see her, like, you know, she's, like, cleaned herself up and everything. It doesn't, you know, like, you know, finally taking a shower and has, like, nice clothes on. You see her, like, pop a pill in her mouth and, like, she walks away.
yeah. And likewise, I could see Lily Rabe, the mom, who seems to be a no talent kind of a, like, it does seem to be like a joke that she has no talent and that she, you know, she's like this Instagram person or whatever. Like, I could see it maybe turning out that she takes it and turns out to actually have like a great design sense and really become somebody in the end, right? Gets the last laugh, like has to kill her husband, has to kill her child maybe. And then somehow, I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I could be wrong because I also felt like I might have expected Zena Porter to have a larger role to play. And I don't know why, because there are many people in the Ryan Murphy universe who one year you're a major character on the show, the next year you're a cameo on the show, right? And it has to do
yeah.
with him writing for an ensemble, and it has to do with just their other filming schedules of their other shows and whatever, right? So I don't know why I should be...
The great thing
yeah.
about him having this stable, this large stable of actors that he has is you can do that and it makes it kind of great. You know, you can have an Adina Porter who's in 2.5 episodes and gets killed because you still have Evan Peters and this one and that, you know, you still have all these other actors. So it's like there are no small actors in any of the small parts. At this
right.
point, you know, like this is season
yeah.
10 where I mean, other than Alma, is there really one person on the show that has a
new?
Name
yeah.
that, like,
well, like
an actor, Macaulay Culkin is new to this, but we know who he is. You know, like, is there any any character in this show that we've seen that we don't, we can't name the actor because they're either a Ryan Murphy actor or somebody like Macaulay Culkin who we know who he is. I think at most, I think two of the cops that are kind of in the background might be the only people I couldn't put a name to.
Right.
You know, it's gotten to that level.
There's no plot armor, right? There's no like, oh, it's Walking Dead.
Exactly.
Norman Reedus will never die. Norman Reedus is never going to die. Or there's no like, oh, you cast Jessica Lange as a character. Obviously, she's going to live. Actually, no, because it's the Ryan Murphy show, and she might have a cameo.
Yeah.
Well, she's out of it, but you know what I mean, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No plot armor is the exact perfect way to put it.
Yeah, there's no plot armor.
All right, I know we're having fun with this, but
we're
pushing
12:30
now.
We gotta go. Yep, all right.
Well, anytime we have five shows, I always put 2.5 hours because I know how it goes.
I know.
Especially when you guys talk about Walking Dead too much.
Because we hate it so much. We need to restrain ourselves.
I know.
Because it's just a giant complaint, 30 minutes of complaining. Next week, I'll try to keep us to 20 minutes of complaining, okay?
All right.
That's my plan,
that
20
good.
Minutes. All right. Same slate of shows next week, except maybe Shang-Chi, maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if Jamie gets to it or not. If not.
Okay.
We got so many shows, we have to hold it off anyway.
Yeah, we might.
All right.
So, all right.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Good time, as always. You too.
Yep.
And we'll do it again next week. Good night, everybody.
Talk to you soon. Good night.
Bye.